Broken.
We have a few extra seats this morning at the table, which has never occurred before. And maybe because of the... Bob, why don't you come up? There probably will be a few more people who come in. It's probably because we've been going now for 4 weeks in a row, and next week will mean 5 weeks in a row because of these special meetings. And today is an off day meeting. Ordinarily, it would not be until next week. And I have a hunch that powering through this much is beginning to show. So let me make a couple of observations before we begin. There were two or three conditions that are new this morning, and I'd like to point them out. We took precautions through our interim committee to correct some of the mechanical conditions, and I see this morning we might not have needed them at all. First, because we've had so many people here standing outside and all inside, we've been working on some plan for months by which we could maintain the dialogue and atmosphere in here, allow those official dialogues and the guests invited to participate at that session, opportunity to sit down in this room, and at the same time provide for all those who came in addition to those. What happened was this week we got it hooked up to run into the chambers, council chambers next door, that is loudspeakers, so those at the overflow could go in there and listen. And we're going to test that out shortly. Does it come through all right over there? So we are testing that this morning. And as I said, we probably didn't need it this morning, but this is a good time to test it. And in addition, the sign outside the door mentions that only official dialogues would be seated before 9:45. That sign will be out there every week from now on, every time we meet from now on, and this morning, of course, as I say, we didn't need it. We're here to discuss, then, the agenda that's in front of you. Maybe some others will come in before it's over. One of the city councilmen indicated he would be up shortly. He will be able to stay a while, Mr. Sam Lawton. I haven't heard from any of the others. I've heard from no one from the city manager's office this morning. Have you, Mary? Yeah, I was told yesterday they would be here. There's one big matter being conducted. They've signed the contract with the baseball team. Bob, I think there's one seat down there. You can take there. If any of the other official dialogue has come in, I will ask that some of us sitting at the table move back and let them take, but you're in good shape now. City manager's office yesterday was engaged literally all day in signing the contract that you now know makes San Diego a big league, baseball league team. San Diego Padres, members of the National Baseball League. They were involved in that yesterday, and they had some more details to work out today, and all of them are in the act. They will be here, so I was informed, if they can complete it such that at least two or three can get away, or one can get away. Anyway, we're going to discuss this morning a follow-up from the previous topic of education in the city. terms of the San Diego School District. Format will be as follows. On your agenda, you see the first is number one, discussion of city school programs, ESL programs, proposed RSA program, related programs, sensitivity training for teachers. Format we will follow will be first, Dr. Hall will have a chance to present his material as we agreed upon the last time. I think for discussion purposes and facilitating it, it's in generally three parts. George, if you will present one part, whichever you choose, you know, make decide, present it, and let's go through the whole presentation of that part before we stop to ask questions, react, or what have you, and let's do it in terms of stopping him only for a question of clarification, and the chair will try to rule it that way. If you don't understand the point, obviously you would stop and try to get a point of clarification. But to react to what he's saying, I implore us to follow the rules that we've laid down. Allow him the opportunity, in whichever way he wishes, to present it. Tell us what section he will delineate what he's talking about, and then we'll move on to the other report. George, is that all right with you?
That's fine.
Estelle?
I would just like to ask one thing. Dr. Hall going to discuss the whole program, or is Herb going to discuss that?
The proposal is that there be three presentations.
What I wanted to do, if a Mexican American is going to discuss it, I want to raise right here, at least so it'll go on record, an objection to that. Because I think then it becomes too much of a personal thing. As I raised it once before, I would like to raise it again, even before he starts, so he does know that I personally object to using a Mexican American to describe any of this program.
You are opposing to. Well, I think you said that's what you want to raise.
I just
want to
pose again.
I understand that the question is why you have Mexican Americans on the school board, I presume. You don't have any teachers, like, no. You see, you have black, brown, and white teachers. Each of us are entitled to our own personal objection, but I would like to know what different color would it make on the picture of the Board of Education if a Mexican American would present a certain phase of the program of school board?
Well, let's clarify that, and I think that's a legitimate, I agree, that's a legitimate question. Just on this point, John?
Right.
Okay.
Well, Mrs. Chacon raised this point at the last dialogue that there's no objection to a Mexican-American as an individual, but the idea is that it would give to the majority community a fratricidal aspect of the dialogue. In other words, the Mexican-Americans might be attacking Mexican-Americans, and I recall that she specifically requested at the last dialogue that this not happen, because we don't want to project this kind of an image to the majority community. And it was felt by a great many of the Mexican Americans here that the school board, and I don't know rightly or wrongly, was doing this so that perhaps the Mexican Americans who do have legitimate grievances about certain programs, about the school board in general, might be reluctant to raise it.
All right,
Mr. Taylor, the reason for my question, I think it's about time for us to get objective in this thing if we're going to do anything at all. Now, we have sensitivity training for teachers. Now, we might need some for us, that a dialogue, and if we want to be sensitive to every issue that comes up. I said, here again, you can't regulate personal desires, individual desires, but any dialogue where you have, now if they had to go out and recruit a Mexican American to talk about the school program, I could understand, but to have them on the school board, you have black on the school board, that will participate in this discussion also.
So you mean in the school district, not board?
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. This is what we're talking about. Yes, but in the school district, that's what I have reference to, yes.
Well, that's not... Well, hold it a second. Let me go back then and try to put this in proper perspective so that we at least have it on record properly. At one discussion, there was a heated discussion that I recall to which you were alluding that stated that when the blacks were here, that it was felt by many blacks as well as Mexican Americans that they should not be here in that position. That it put some of the blacks in positions to have to criticize them individually. And you raised it, as I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, in parallel to the Mexican Americans. Is that correct? That as a group there were certain objections to using these individuals for certain purposes.
Well, I think, I can't recall exactly my motivation. I just thought it was in bad taste, and Mr. Russell followed it up by describing that situation as probably being very difficult on the blacks that were here. And they were really, you know, put on the spot for the school administration when it should have been the administrators having to answer instead of showing their evidently their program that hadn't even started, you know, or had just taken a week or 2 weeks of in existence, and they made it sound like, gee, the ideal thing. And this is what I was followed up by Mr. Russell for what I thought was very good reason.
Well, let me have one more reaction from Bob, and let's get it in right perspective, whether it be individuals or groups or what have you, and then move on and let George tell us how he has it laid out. And I think that would, Bob, did you want to,
for the record? This is for the record. I think that the concern of some people, it isn't that there's objection as to who makes the presentation, but some people wonder what the motive is of the district. There are some people who are concerned that some people are being used, to underline this blatantly and obviously, being used to promote a positive image, and I think that shouldn't be an issue. We know that there are positive efforts being made to improve the situation. We know that. I know that. I've worked with all along, and I know that. But when we come out with this public relations image again, that, you know, everything's groovy and we've got these people moving along, this is the thing that we're saying, look, forget it. We're not naive here. We know give people more credit than that. The people here are sophisticated.
It's much better
to say, okay, we've done some things, we haven't done enough, we're working on it, okay, where can we go together to improve? We're all interested in improvement. In the meantime, while we kid each other with PR, these kids, as I said before, still sit in these classes with the same hang-up semester after semester. And you know, at the board meeting the other day, I quoted Dr. Clark. You want me to quote him again?
No, we don't want to.
It's a pretty important point. I think we've got to get that over with and say, now, okay, where do we go from here? Let's put our cards on the table and deal honestly with the problem. Okay?
All right, Major.
Yes. Now, but getting back to the point, you raised a real delicate point, and it's a real one. But as school districts and other agencies respond to the kinds of things we are suggesting here, many of us marginal people are going to get caught there. And it's a real nasty place to be. But realistically, if you're going to talk about English as a second language and you put Herbie Barra up as the head of the program, you've got to sit on that hot seat and tell about it. And if you think that's bad, we're going to talk about sensitivity training, and the district has set me up as head of the department. I mean, as the one that's in charge of it. Now, I don't know how skilled I am at saying what I'm going to say, because I'm not going to whitewash in the district, and I'm going to tell what I think is missing. At the same time, I'm going to tell what I think we're doing. It's a bad place to be to tell, but I don't think me and her can dodge it. You accepted the job, then you have to do it. You're the one that ought to tell about it. You hired to do it, tell it.
And
I expect black people and brown people to understand that we are on that kind of spot and that we have that kind of obligation.
Well, you realize that what you're saying is you're going to describe a program for an administration that has overwhelmed the population, and all of a sudden you give them one from 9:30 to 12 to be able to release themselves from all these years of something and come through.
I think that
the administration, in order to find out
what
the
people... not trusting her.
Well, in order to...
I know her's not going to do it. I know her better. If you think that we're going to just spend this 3.5 hours and everything's lovely now, that isn't the purpose. We're realistic, too.
Well, that means...
But in order to make
it... Wait a minute. Let's put it in proper perspective again so that we have it recorded. And then let Dr. Hall start, and let's raise it after the first presentation. And then, as for this dialogue is set up, to bring these feelings out. If at that time, after the first session has ended on that topic, you feel that you have heated feelings about it, the feelings have to come out too. And I have a hunch here we really are talking about that delicate thing that's been raised. It's a delicate thing, but it's real, and we're going to have to face it, it seems to me. So the objection is taken as valid. It's recorded now as part of what started then. It will get heated as we go along, and let's be men about it, as you mentioned. If you're on the hot pad, let's sit there and take it. Let all the criticisms come out, whichever way they wish. That's the purpose of this. So, if we're going to move on, let's record that it's real. Let's record that it's valid. And let Estelle again raise the point, as she had before, and as several other times. Now, is that...
But there is a point that some people are here, are not here, because Herb was going to describe the program.
Yeah,
we
did, right. Okay.
And I want that raised right now.
Okay, that's recorded too. Bob, can you make sure it's not on this so we can get this?
You implied a factor of trust, Tom, and you personalized it. I would say if we don't have trust, it's because we're products of this society, and this district has done things to have us question the trust.
So you're really talking about the motive and intent, as I see it. That's what the objection is. Motive and intent of the district versus using certain people to do certain things.
Well,
that we can record it that way, we can move on.
Well, also that Mr. McJunkin said that, okay, now you have your chance. You've been sat on and pressed, and now you get, without too much warning, we are being given a chance in 2.5 hours to express. I mean, it's impossible, and we do feel inhibited. That what we have to do is what would seem personal, because we're very personal people, will be a personal attack on an individual who has set up a program that we might be very dissatisfied with.
Okay, I think that's taken well. Now to move on and see where we're going, and if you will not react to that point unless you feel so, react any way you want to, Dr. Hall.
I would like to comment on what is the plan for the people scheduled to make presentations. And I think I'm talking to the point, and I think I'm understanding of the points that have been made. But may I go through the full plan as to what we are proposing? If you want to use your agenda and look for yourself the plan, why please? We are planning to deal with 1A, then have a pause for any reaction, to deal with 1B, to deal with number 2. The related programs, I note on your outline, but we have no planned presentation for that. So, if time permits and it comes in at the end, it will come in as someone else raises it for concern or comments or what have you. Now, the plan for the presentation regarding ESL, which to us means English as a second language, has 3 parts to it. Part 1 will be a report on the district program with very minor assistance from the state, and we'll be calling on Hal Wingard, the district specialist, and he is not a minority person, and I'll introduce him later, to comment on the district's regular program. Second, we will be calling on Herb Abera to report on a project with special federal financing under ESEA Title III, which has been in operation for 18 months. And I say that this is not something that is newly arrived at. Now, part of Herb's report will move to the other part, that which has been in operation for 18 months under a new project is being continued at three times the financing. So he will touch on the future as well as the past. And then I will ask to come in and give only some facts as it relates to the operation of ESL classes that will be an inner city program, because we should get all this related to ESL in that one presentation. But I'm pointing out to, in part, to answer Mrs. Chacon. Mr. Aberry will not give the total presentation. Mr. Wingard and I will give a part, and if you want to direct your criticisms back to the part that is separate from the demonstration program, you can direct it at Mr. Wingard or at me. Now, this is our first big part. The second will be the...
If I can say, go ahead with the first then.
Well, no, let me give the whole picture.
Okay.
The other people scheduled for presentation as the second big portion, after whatever give and take occurs after the ESL part, will be Norm Hauser, who is the director for the inner city program. It is not a proposed program, it is an approved program. And Mr. Hauser will be making that presentation. And then, number three, Dominic Junkins will be making the report on the orientation of teachers, human relations, and as listed here, sensitivity training for teachers. And the 2.5 years, Tom, that you've been with the district, all right, this is an assignment that Mr. McJunkins has had for 2.5 years as the assistant to the superintendent and for this very area. And as he has already stated for himself, this is his assignment, and it is very appropriate then, in my mind, that he be reporting on what has been his area of special responsibility in, and if I can come with one additional point, this is district administration. And again, loosely, it's referred to as Board of Education, but all of us are district officers, administrators, as separate from the five people who are the Board of Education and policy people. Now, this is the plan. And these are, in addition to myself, four other people will be making presentations as scheduled.
I have you right then. Let's get them to see you all together. Right? We're taking A and B, three parts.
Right.
We're taking B, one part.
Right.
Sorry. And then we're getting to see you all together and moving to Mike Johnson.
Right.
Training.
Right.
And
what is C?
C is the...
sensitivity and our human relations training.
Not getting related programs.
Oh.
Because we eliminate that, they have no presentation. Then, if I'm right, we're getting to the training.
Right.
Okay, you're on board.
All right, now may I introduce Mr. Hal Wingard, who has been with the district 2 years as the specialist for foreign language. This does include responsibility for English as a second language. He came to us from Los Angeles City Schools, where he had been consultant in foreign language, and I think it's very pertinent to remark that in the 2 years that Mr. Wingard has been with the district, he has been aggressive in giving a hard time, if you will, to district officers like myself over his concern that the program for English as a second language was less than it should be. And he's been doing this for 2 years. But with that as an introduction, may I call on Mr. Wingard to report the status as he sees it and what has happened in the 2 year period.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and Mrs. Chacon. I want to make it a matter of record that I am not now, and never have I been, a Mexican American, but that I would be as proud to be a Mexican American or a Negro as I am to be whatever I am now.
I want to make it on record that I don't understand your explanation at all.
I think maybe it would be well to describe a little bit of our attitude of how we see the problem. Because you may have some attitudes about the problem, and this will perhaps clarify then the specifics of what follows. A child who doesn't have English at his command is literally in no position to profit from the entire curriculum. And therefore, the learning of English for a child who doesn't speak English is of primary importance. It is number one priority for this kid. He cannot profit from the rest of the curriculum until he has control of English. Further, this is not a yes or no situation. This is not something that one, the skill of speaking English is not something that a child acquires overnight. Indeed, you probably have had acquaintance with people of Mexican descent whose English bore the marks of the Spanish language in terms of an accent or perhaps in terms of the complexity of the language which they used. And this sort of thing gets capitalized on in rather cruel ways in people like Jose Jimenez, who makes a living out of imitating the stereotype of the Mexican-American speaking English. I feel that this sort of thing has to be avoided. And it can only be avoided by providing this child, early in his entry into the school system, with instruction in English. We call this instruction in English as a second language. This instruction is not something that can go on for 1 month or 2 months, but rather is something that needs to continue over a long period of time. An elementary child in the lower levels probably learns English more rapidly than a child student at the secondary level. But in any case, this is a matter of, say, 3 or 4 years of continuous instruction for this child. In fact, this child should have this specialized instruction until he arrives at the point where he can compete with the native speaker of English in all of the subject areas as a native speaker of the same ability. Now, I say all of this to give you a little bit of the philosophy that we have, and if the implementation within the district seems to fall short of meeting the needs of every child, I say this so that you will understand that we're as aware of this as well, we try to be aware of this. The district has had at one elementary school and one junior high school programs in English as a second language over an extended period. 2.5 years ago, through the ESEA funds, two additional elementary schools were added to this, and several secondary schools were added to this in terms of their having a program. Now, I'll describe that program in just a minute.
And so how many schools have it now, you say?
Total number of schools, it's a little, I don't have that statistic.
Two more elementary schools were added.
Yes.
An addition was made 2.5 years ago.
I'm saying that at two and a half years ago, when we had additional federal funds, that two additional elementary schools and three additional secondary schools were added to the program. However, I'm cautioning that to say how many schools are in the program does not say how the need is being met.
No, now, we're going to have questions on that.
All right.
We recognize all that.
All right.
If you can give us numbers of schools, that eliminates a lot of questions.
Okay,
come
very
up
good.
We
very good.
Have it as fact. You don't have to elaborate on it, just the numbers.
Well, those are the numbers there. Then, in the spring of last year, three teachers at the elementary level were given special assignments, and these teachers, and I'll have to add this very quickly, these teachers cover 12 schools. So starting in about the middle of March of last year, 12 additional elementary schools were covered. Now by that I mean that there were some children in those schools getting some instruction in English as a second language. This is pretty much the state of affairs at the end of the school year. There were then the following kinds of programs in our district. At the elementary level, there were three schools each of which had two single classes of ESL students. These were self-contained classes. These children received English as a second language and other instruction for the entire year, or approximately the year, by a teacher who understood the needs of these children. These children were selected for these classrooms because of their English as a second language need. They were not given only English as a second language instruction, but obviously the fact that they were, in many cases, really some of them enter these classes with no command of English, obviously the whole curriculum had to be modified to their needs. All right? There were six then of these classes, two in three elementary schools. And frankly, this was pretty much the situation at the elementary level until these three additional teachers were assigned. When the three additional teachers were assigned, one of the teachers covered six elementary schools, another serviced four schools, and another serviced two elementary schools, in providing not only instruction for the children, but also in providing certain services to the school, such as meeting with parents and other kinds of activities that are a necessary part of all of this. At the secondary level, the major thrust of the ESL takes place at one of our junior high schools, where there is a large population, and this school provides instruction not only at a beginning level. Well, let me go back to the elementary. Most of the children who have had this instruction for 1 year then go into a regular classroom. Now, the shock of coming into a regular classroom where only English is spoken has been delayed for those children for approximately a year while they've had the time to learn some English. But there still is a shock when they go into the regular classroom because, frankly, most of our regular teachers do not have the know-how to provide this child with the necessary kinds of activities to carry him along in that sequence which I said he should have. That is, the most that a child might have at the elementary level would be 1 year, and that's not sufficient. However, at one of our junior high schools, we have a program whereby a child could get English as a second language instruction for his entire 3 years at the school. At this particular school, the beginning student in English as a second language takes three periods of English as a second language at the beginning phase. He takes two periods when he reaches the intermediate phase, and he takes one period of English as a second language when he becomes an advanced student. The rest of his program, then, is made up of regular courses to the extent that it can be. At some of the other schools, at one of the other junior high schools, there are a couple of sections of English as a second language. At one of our high schools, there are five periods of English as a second language, and at another, there is one period of English as a second language. This, then, marks or describes the, in broadest of terms, the English as a second language program for the schools in the regular session. I might point out that the surveys that we have made to determine the number of students vary with the surveyor. And so that we have reports, for example, a survey which I made in 1966 showed that there were 1,250 approximately elementary school children who needed English as a second language, 280 junior high school and 249 senior high school students. Mr. McJunkins ran a survey for the district in which he found that there were a little over 1,300 students who had limited use of English and 300 and some odd students who had no command of English within the district. A more recent survey taken at the end of the last year showed in elementary 354 students still needing English as a second language experience.
Now, you say last year.
At the end of the last
June,
year.
Just passed.
Yes, it was taken, in fact, in June. Now, the only thing I'd like to point out about these figures is that we do not have, there do not exist, instruments for measuring the proficiency of a non-native speaker in the English language, his proficiency in English. We need to have such instruments. We don't have them. Therefore, we have estimates based upon varying professionals, either administrators or teachers, estimate of what these kids need. And this is very difficult. Because, for instance, a child who speaks English fluently but with a very strong accent of Spanish showing through his language, to me, this child needs special instruction. He cannot be mobile socially. His whole social and economic development as a child and as an adult is going to be depressed until he can speak standard English. So this child needs special instruction, but you see, many people would not conceive of this child as being one to count in as needing ESL. Some people might just say, well, that's the kid who doesn't speak a word of English. So all of these statistics are a little hard to rely on as anything formal. Now, I'd like to describe one other aspect of our program and then open it to any questions you may have. Three summers ago, and prior to that time, the district offered ESL classes at the elementary level to any people who wanted to take them. And the district was in a position to assign as many teachers as might be necessary. There was a hard time getting any children to take the class. 2 years ago, the district, working in conjunction with the community, went into a recruiting program, and I would say it was the community that did the recruiting. And community agents actually knocked on doors of parents, informed them about the program, and recruited some 300 children, of whom 190 stayed in the classes. So approximately 200 kids went through the summer session. At that time, there were 5 teachers assigned, and there were 10 classes for these kids. Last summer, or this summer which has just gone by, the district undertook to do the recruiting, and it did recruiting and recruited approximately 300 children through means not so very different from those which the district normally employs to let people know that there will be a summer session program. So there had been an effect from what the community had done the preceding year of alerting families that this program was available. In addition, however, I felt that there was still more that could be done, and so the community again went out and recruited an additional 200 children, so that we had some 500 names of children for this program.
Can I clarify that community this?
Yes.
That was the Community Action Council. That would be on the record.
Yes. The community, well, actually,
it was not the administration.
It was, well, let me clarify now. The administration, the school district, actively recruited and recruited over 300 children. In addition to this, then, Mr. Ruben Dominguez was the contact person, and he then contacted CAC groups, who then went door to door and indeed recruited an additional 200 children.
For the record, I think it's important to know that those 200 students were recruited in 3 days.
Well, for clarifying records, the let's go. For this summer, then, we had, as contrasted to the 5 teachers hired last summer, we had 9 teachers, we had 18 classes, and the final enrollment of students who went all through the 6-week session was 322. And it strikes me that this is a very significant growth pattern here. I'd like also to point out that every one of these teachers had at least one bilingual aide. Some of them had as many as 2 bilingual aides to help in the instruction of these kids.
clarification so we can move on. The teachers themselves were Mexican Americans?
Not all of the teachers were Mexican Americans. In fact, during the summer, two of those teachers were Mexican Americans.
Of the 18?
Yes. I'd like to point out that the teachers.
Of the nine.
Two of the nine.
Of the nine, I mean.
Right. Okay. The teachers who teach in summer are teachers who elect to do so and who want to do so and who choose English as a second language. And many of our regular English as a second language teachers are enrolled in workshops, in doing all kinds of other activities during the summer, so they weren't even available.
Question, Bob?
Yeah. You said that you selected teachers who understood the needs of the kids. Now, I'm talking about high schools, and I won't say which one.
I don't think I said that.
I quoted you right here. Teachers who understand the needs of kids. This is what you said in terms of... I know of a teacher who was selected, and I talked to Herb about this the other day, an Anglo-sized Mexican who was teaching five periods of this, where the counselor, who's a Spanish-speaking counselor, had to take the kids out of the class. I had two as monitors, and a 10th grade kids in the 12th grade class, because this person screamed at these kids, was insensitive, created many, many problems for the kids. If this is the type of person, and I'm not discrediting your program, because I think the program's good, but what I am wondering about, and others are, how you select the people. If this is the type of person who understands kids, God help us. The second thing is, what about the kids? Once they get through this program, and this is another area that's not yours, but who are then tracked right back in the 10th or 11th or 12th grade into a basic class where they're termed to be dumb and they believe this after being brainwashed semester after semester. Your program is fine, but when they're tracked right back into this other thing, which they are.
Bob, can we say after this whole section is through, and I think your question would be appropriate. Can we get through the whole
section? May I just answer the
no,
first part of the
question?
No,
please don't. Well,
do you prefer to have it out?
My request was that he didn't make the presentation. Mr. Wingard did say, and I want to correct him, that he would be ready for questions. I'm asking that we have the full discussion after three parts, of which this has been the first.
It's in dialogue, and the questions come up then.
That's right.
This is a speech. That is not dialogue. The questions come up as he relates. You cannot recall emotion and recall all that.
Carol, I think we should add something here. Each time the school officials have come, Dr. Hall, he's always come prepared with a structured, prepared statement. Now, he can't deviate from that particular structure and have a dialogue. This isn't a banquet where you're presenting in front of your groups of people certain facts. This is a dialogue. If you haven't come prepared to dialogue outside of a structure presentation, then let's just forget it, because you're wasting our time.
Mr. Wayne May, I remember that, and I'm now going back 4, 5, 6 months ago, when I thought the regular members of dialogue agreed on the structure. And frankly, the structure was that for one meeting there would be statement of perception, and the people that might have the answers would say nothing during that period, and the perceptions would come out. The perceptions of the minorities, the perceptions of the majorities regarding a given problem. And then, at a next meeting, we would come back to have, and my illustration in my mind is the bus company, to come back at a time when the bus company people would make a report of what they had. And yes, there would at that time be additional dialogue. Now, if we go back to that structure, our school people will move to the back rows, and we will listen to that which our people want to state as their perceptions of concerns. But yes, it is assumed that we at this point are making a report. And that which we discussed early was that after each part there would be the opportunity for discussion, which I would assume is what is at issue, but we're asking that it not be while we're trying to get out what we consider to be the facts regarding a area raised as a problem.
Are you saying that you want to present that?
We would still like to go 1, 2, 3 under ESL, and then we're ready for the give and take of dialogue.
Cal, just for the record, is what Joe has said correct? Is that the way we set this up? Now, you know, people continue to come in and don't quite understand how it was going. Now, isn't that the way it was set up? You would have a meeting at which people said everything they thought, and then you would instruct people to go and bring in a formal report.
That's correct.
Isn't that the way it was set up? And isn't that what the school district is now doing?
Yeah. I was just trying to decide whether or not that's violating the other thing. They have another thing. I think, though, the chair will rule this time. Follow that structure. So we'll go ahead and get this one section out of the way. And then get back to this. Now, we might not even get to other sections, let me say. We might not even get to the other sections. But I think he's absolutely correct that the structure was that for a unit, so we're not violating that, for a unit, at least present it. It's as if one person was presenting all of these, is what I'm saying.
Sure.
And then tear them apart, or whatever you want to say, as Dr. Hall was saying. But let's get that section out of the way. And then let your emotions out, feelings, reactions, and what have you. Then I think we don't violate the spirit of the dialogue that way either. But I think if we were to have all three sections presented, then I think we would be violating it. So in order to facilitate it, keep your feelings where they are, but let's get this one section out of the way. Let's pretend that one person is making it. That's what I'm saying. And let him do that. Get this one section out of the way. We don't get to B and we don't have a C. We don't get to B and 2, you would agree then at least we are dialoguing and we're still within the structure. Estelle and Frank, I think that still takes care of that thing. All right, go ahead, please, with the...
Then I would like to now call on Herbert Vera, who has been the director for a demonstration program in ESL for the past 18 months. This has been a special program with federal financing under the law we know as ESEA Title III. The purpose of the demonstration is to develop new techniques, develop new methods, develop new material, and to demonstrate for other districts and other educators what has been developed. And so, Herb, if you will then report on your project of the past 18 months, and while you're continuing, move into how it is to be funded at three times the level for the year ahead.
Mr. Chairman, dialoguers, I'm Herbie Botta, Project Director for English as a Second Language, now called ESL Bilingual Bicultural, a project that began yesterday. Some of you are well acquainted with this project, having had Phil Del Campo as co-chairman of this dialogue committee for many years, and he was on the staff for 18 months. This...
On the staff of ESL.
ESL. This project came about a little over 2 years ago when ESEA Title III PACE Center, or the headquarters, was situated here in the county and established. And they were to be given funds for different types of programs, and they were not necessarily aimed at minority groups. At that time, Dr. Daylor was the chairman of this committee, and I think he still is, and they were going to spend about $1 million of their dollars in trying to identify problems for San Diego County. And he said, why waste all of that money when it's so obvious that the most important problem not being attacked is English as a second language or specialized programs for the Mexican Americans? The program was developed for the Mexican American of San Diego County, for San Diego City to be the funding district. It was recognized there that the problem here was not localized to San Diego City. It was a metropolitan problem for all of the districts in San Diego County. It was recognized that very little was being done and that very few districts were even aware that the problem existed. and it was the hope that this project might be the catalyst for districts to initiate programs. We had two goals. One was to demonstrate effective means of teaching English as a second language, even though on a very limited basis, hoping that in this demonstration, other districts might see that it could be done, and it could be done inexpensively, and that it was needed. Number two, and this is very important, it was very apparent to everyone concerned dealing with Mexican Americans that the Mexican American parent was not being involved in school activities. And in many cases, it was believed that it was because of a lack of interest. We were to demonstrate within this project how the Mexican American parent could be brought into the school program effectively to where they would have an active part, not a passive part. At the same time, an involvement with the Mexican American community as much as possible. For the second goal, we had Bill Del Campo, who many of you know, who was very active with many different community organizations. All right. For the other part, for our curricular or demonstration, we had Lillian Hausema from San Ysidro. Since we were to be multi-district, not just San Diego City, we wanted county involvement. We were to have only one class for demonstration purposes in four different districts. We had an assessment of the different programs in existence in San Diego County and selected four that would show the two things, English as a second language and parents involved. Remember, we're talking about one class within each district. We had very limited funds, and even then, we had nothing to offer the different districts, such as money for teachers. All we were offering them was $250 for purchase of materials and a community aid to assist them in their liaison with the community. The four districts were Carlsbad Elementary, San Diego Union High School, San Ysidro Elementary, and San Diego City. Within each one of these districts, for parents' involvement, we had a commitment that there would be four parent Spanish-speaking conferences, sort of like a PTA, but the difference here would be that the agenda would come from the parents so that it would be their concerns. They weren't to be spoken to, they were to do most of the speaking. In fact, when an administrator wished to speak at these meetings, it was in Spanish or with translation, but the meeting was run in Spanish. One of the things that we wanted to come out of this very much, not just the involvement of the parents, but the fact that adult education programs would be established for the non-English speaking parent.
Turn it again, please.
All right. One of the outcomes from the parent involvement would be the establishment of adult classes for English instruction or ESL classes on the adult level. What we wanted was the parents to come forth and say that they wanted them themselves, because we knew, at least we assumed, that this is what they felt. And this is what was expressed in meetings, and this is what was established in certain cases. also within our own center, which is called a demonstration center, but it's really a headquarters building, we did try to bring together materials that had been published from throughout the nation for teaching English as a second language. Also, background material on the Mexican Americans so that people could come forth into our center, any of those that wish to begin a program and have a place to where they could evaluate this material. Along with this, we had an in-service training program in conjunction with San Diego City Schools in the county. It was under the leadership of San Diego State College. At that time, that summer program was under the leadership of the county coordinator for ESL, Mr. Robert Landon. We worked in conjunction with this. We didn't feel that it should be separate, and we still don't. We provided the funds so that teachers could attend the workshop for 20 teachers
throughout the county.
We continue to do this on a monthly basis with in-service training, in which we paid for the substitutes for 20 teachers. And surprisingly, districts put forth substitute money on the road, and we had approximately 100 teachers coming forth into the center for in-service training once a month. With these in-service training sessions, we concentrated on two things: methodology, the effective means of teaching English as a second language. Number two was cultural awareness, acquainting the teachers with those things that they should be aware of about the Mexican American. Probably one of the highlights was the one presentation made by the Maya students, in which they expressed their true feelings about the educational system that they had encountered. We made a videotape of this, as we did many of our cultural awareness sessions, and this one and many others are being distributed nationally, and we have got terrific response on this one first. I'd like to say that. To this date, in the 18 months, we've had over 1,500 visitors coming through the center just to talk to us, not just from San Diego County, but all over the nation. And we feel that in some way we've been a catalyst for some of the programs to begin in other areas, not just San Diego County. When we began, we had a commitment from 12 school districts to be part of our program. When we were writing up the project for the new proposal, we had 20 districts within our district committed. We've had an awareness that we weren't aware of. We have a commitment not only for teaching English as a second language, but also for the involvement of the parents. But I would like to say this, that in our survey when we began, we tried to see how many kids were involved in English as a second language in the entire county. And we went on this on a broad basis. If a youngster was receiving tutorial assistance, even for 15 minutes a week, we counted this. After all, someone was giving him individual attention that might be the motivation that he needed. At that time, we found 1,000 that could be counted throughout the county. Yet, in our survey, we found that at least 5,000 needed it. When we submitted the new one, it was up to 9,000 that needed it. How many will be receiving it in September, we don't know.
Using the same criteria as mentioned before.
Right. I can truthfully say that of all the visitations I have made, I've made many throughout the United States, throughout the Southwest, looking at different programs, English as a second language, studied reports. I have not found a district yet anywhere that was totally committed to the entire non-English speaking population. In other words, the programs were not meeting all of the children. If
Are you editorializing? Because we're talking about this district and not others. And about your personal feelings, because I would like to zero in on this district and forget the others.
I'm sorry. My concern is with the Mexican-American child, wherever he might be. My project was for...
But the San Diego City Schools can do nothing about the Mexican-American child in another district.
Background violin music.
Oh.
But let me see if I can help her get through that. You're saying that no district is totally committed, therefore our district is not totally committed.
Right.
That would satisfy what you're saying, if you keep it localized is what she's saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
That I said that no district had been totally committed up to June, that we found youngsters that were non-English speaking, that were not getting specialized instruction. We found that there were very few programs at all that were taking the child to the point where he could compete successfully with his English-speaking counterpart. In other words, English as a second language could have been at one level, two levels, but it had to go beyond that. Now, we submitted a new proposal with guidelines from Washington as to some of the things they wanted to see demonstrated, because after all, Title III is a unique type of project. This one was to give funds to demonstrate those things that would be transportable to other parts of the Southwest. Remember, Washington is not just concerned with a child here in San Diego, but must be concerned with that which can't be used somewhere else. They have requested for us to initiate a program in developing materials and bilingual bicultural instruction, and I didn't say education, I said instruction, at the preschool level, kindergarten. The immigrant youngster that comes in at the upper grades, 4th, 5th, and 6th, and content, instruction in Spanish, social studies, and math at the junior high. Also, to do a more effective job of truly identifying the non-English speaking child and refine some of the testing in this area.
Clarification. You're saying a part of it is federal here?
All of it is federal. All of mine is federal.
Okay.
But it's Title III.
Okay.
Which is labeled innovative and exemplary. For demonstration purposes, for that that can be transportable to anywhere where there's a similar situation.
Got it.
And that's why ours is a demonstration type project, only to show that that can be done. We will be concentrating all of our demonstrations in San Diego City. Our elementary program will be at Lowell. Our secondary will be at Memorial. We have hired on our staff two new people, which I'd like to introduce, because I feel rather fortunate in having been able to secure these people to assist me. As you know, Bill Del Campo is on a sabbatical working at Cal Western on his doctorate. Leonard Fierro, would you stand please so that they would know you, will be our communications community coordinator for the project for the next 3 years. And Dr. Stephen Moreno, who just joined our staff, psychologist, who will be assisting us with evaluation and testing. That is the program.
No questions, please. Let's go right on, Dr. Hall, to that third section and get this out.
Yeah, mine is very brief to be factual only in making a join between what Herb has been reporting, which is strictly for purposes of demonstration. It's an investment of federal money in what can be demonstrated, both for local purposes and for dissemination beyond that. There are some people hired, they will give service to children in the process of demonstration, but it's not what I call an operation. Now, in the report which will follow on inner city, there is a further investment, and this is future, in the operational aspect of ESL programs.
We're not talking about the demonstration part, we're talking about operational. Okay.
That is operational. We learn from the past 18 months of demonstration what we should be doing. We have funding under InterCity to do it, and this is what I want to report. In the five elementary schools that are part of InterCity project, to date we have 4 teachers. 8 new teachers will be added, bringing up to 12. In the secondary, we now have, at Memorial, 20 class sections, and the same number will continue. At San Diego High, we have 5 class sections, and this will be doubled to 10. So, we are in effect adding 1 secondary teacher for the extra 5 sections, and 8 in the elementary, and this will be additional district operational program, but under the category of inner city. And at this point, we now have given our 3 parts to the presentation, and we should pause now for change to the others before we go into the next scheduled presentation.
Right. Focus of clarification so that everybody gets it. The inner city, in effect, has that name then, from what you said. Clarification only. It's really taking the demonstration of the
operational
from the demonstrations and bringing it down now to where the school district is using the project called Inner City to put into operation.
Correct.
In terms of ESL and other aspects of it.
The method and technique material that Curtis.
Inner City is at this point then primarily directed at the ESL.
No.
Okay.
There are many elements in inner city. I'm only saying one of these, with considerable financing, is to put operational ESL program.
Okay, we're open now. So if we don't get to the other down here, we're all right, we can dialogue now. Okay, I saw Frank Chan first.
I think it's been pointed out that the school district, the city school district, has really not accepted any responsibility since the majority of these funds have come through federal sources. I think I'd like to direct a couple of questions at Mr. Wingard. First of all, he mentioned about the elaborate English as a Second Language program. And I think he also pointed out that we had something like 9 teachers who were teaching.
During the summer.
I know of the summer session program that's currently underway now. If this is so well coordinated, why hasn't or why wasn't Herbie Lotta from the ESL program consulted to work with this summer program? The classrooms, as they stand now, I think this is very well aware of the overcrowded situation, the lack of trained teachers to teach this program this summer. You can go to Balboa School, you can go to the schools in my district and see exactly these conditions that I'm speaking about. So why wasn't the ESL consulted? If you're going to run an ESL program for the summer where you're dealing with 500 kids, and you only have some 9 teachers to actually administer it. I know at Linda Vista and Kit Carson, they're doubling sessions. You have a teacher that teaches from 8 to 10, and then from 10 to 12, you have to run over to the other school and teach at the other class. So this is one question I'd like to ask specifically to you as to what this program is and why wasn't her consulted on this.
First of all, may I just point out that there were 322 kids actually in this program. I mean, because the 500 was the number recruited, and many of these, you know, right there. Which leads to a very good ratio, incidentally, of children per teacher. To the other minor point, let me touch the minor points first. The instruction was conceived of as being only English as a second language instruction. There was never a concept of its being all morning long. 2 hours is really more, even there, than a child can take of concentrated English as a second language instruction. So 4 hours would not result educationally in double the amount of return. In fact, it's likely to diminish it considerably. Now, what services would you want Mr. Ibarra to perform for these? Having heard...
If I go into a classroom and I ask the teacher who's teaching English as a second language if she knows Herb Ibarra or the program, then I expect that she has some knowledge of his program. Because from what I've understood this morning in the presentation, that they have been training these teachers for this type of teaching.
But it's not all... In other words, teachers get their training in a multitude of ways. The particular teacher asked us...
Why didn't your office utilize his particular services?
I think we did utilize his services.
May I answer that? We tried to make clear that Mr. Ibarra's program was a special one to demonstrate methods and develop new methods and new material. It is not the district's teacher training program for all of our teachers. And... some of our teachers would have observed Mr. Ibarra's demonstration classes, but it was not set up as a district vehicle to do our total job of preparing teachers and assigning teachers. And to come back, that is the responsibility of Mr. Wingard and my people, operational people. This was a separate demonstration of method, and yes, we have in part utilized it, but we've not said it was our only way of operating this particular program.
Mr. Wingard, you talked about ratio of student-teacher, that being very good. I think that there's also, during the regular session, the regular school year, we have Mr. Belayev and Mr. Contreras, I guess, who teaches on the visiting program, and you named the numbers of schools that they have to attend. They're supposed to be giving that student ESL instruction. I think you know it yourself for a fact that they're probably getting some 45 minutes a week of English as a second language. Now, is this the school district meeting their responsibility for ESL? This is what we're getting at.
May I answer this question, and then let me go back to your first question, which involves Herb here. Three of our elementary school teachers, and only three, were funded to attend the workshop a summer before. Those three attended this workshop and continued to attend during the entire year. Three of all ESL teachers. Now, during the summer, those teachers who are hired from among those who volunteer to do this kind of thing. These teachers have varying degrees of background. Some have had very little experience, so that we have to take them from who's available. And you and I both know, because we're talking about a particular situation, that was a very unsatisfactory situation. Let me clarify my responsibility also. I am not a director of in-service education. I am not in operation. My role within the district is one of curriculum, broad curriculum planning. I try to set up in-service educational opportunities for teachers. We have no means in the district to force teachers to enroll.
Now, I'm sorry, Mr. Greenberg. Perhaps then my last question should be directed to Dr. Hall and ask him, why is it that we only have the two teachers in the visiting, or how many teachers do we have on the visiting program, and why is it that they're only getting a minimum amount of English as a second language instruction?
May I, in part, answer the question, Carol, and in part, I knowingly will not.
Why?
The earlier point raised on Mr. Sides, as I heard it, was what has the district done with its own money? And this is an appropriate question for a Sides.
That wasn't the statement I made.
Well, you asked question, what has the district itself done?
I said, since the program that Herb was outlining was a federal project, I said that the school district really has not met its responsibility in terms of funds for this program.
I quoted it poorly, but I was referring to that concern. it is correct that the district has not done as much in this area as people present believe should be done. I accept this as a fact.
Is that cutting us off?
No.
From any further questions?
No, I'm trying to go on. I present some facts. Mr. Wingard, in his presentation of what was happening as of 2 years ago, indicated that there were, at one time, six teachers who were teaching full-day classes in elementary school. These six teachers were, in fact, funded by federal money under ESEA Title I, or by a state program that has been in being, but on a very limited basis. And for those six, only a very minimal part of the cost was district money. But he also reported that as of this past year, with district money, we added the three teachers who are the ones traveling, as referred to, and the three bilingual aides, one of whom goes with each of the traveling teachers. And yes, the amount of program is that of 45 minutes to those children in 12 schools.
Per week.
Daily, isn't it?
Well, it varies. In one case, the teacher, it depends on the situation. In one case, the teacher sees the kids only once every fourth day. So it depended on the utilization. This varies so much that you can't give an overall description.
But the average is close to 30 to 45 minutes
per week.
All right. This is a traveling program. It is a type of pullout. It is limited. But I am making the point that this was action with district money to do, and it was not federal money.
All right. Frank, what he said is that three aides and three teachers have added, and actually, at this level, the responsibility is the local school district. Am I correct?
That's the responsibility that they've accepted. But I'm saying the overall program has fallen completely short of meeting the needs of the Mexican-American community in terms of English as a second language, if that's what they're getting 45 minutes a week by some visiting teacher who comes by every 4 days. That isn't what we're talking about. We're talking about meeting the responsibility of the community.
I'd like to make, I don't know if this will be a question, but one to Mr. Wingard and the other one to Herb. Now, you mentioned the accents of the Mexican-American that perhaps wasn't even born in Mexico but was born here as being very detrimental to him in the long run. However, we might say the newest group of big immigration we've had was from Europe, of the Jews. And they came over with very heavy accents. And I think if you made a survey of what has happened to the Jews with accents today that came over from Germany, I don't think they're in Jewish as a second language or English as a second language classes. They're very successful. Now, the other term is, so I think that if you make a big thing about an accent, it will work in a negative way instead of a positive way. And maybe just treating them as persons and individuals and letting them keep their accent if they can't get rid of it, but just teaching them something else. The other thing is, Herb, if you were given money without any limitation or restriction whatsoever to put up an ideal program, what would you put up?
How much money are you giving me?
All the money you need.
Well, I've been looking for that person for a long time.
Well, she means money and everything. If you had all the, if in your power to do it, what would you do? Correct? That's it.
Right.
Okay.
Well, an ideal program for the Mexican-American child.
And let's concentrate first on the objective is to first get this child to the point where he can compete successfully with his Anglo counterpart, if we want to put it that way. And this is most of our youngsters, since we know that we have 72% dropout in the state, right? Okay. Now, if we are talking about a linguistic and cultural handicap that the child brings to school at different levels, we wish to attack these in a systematic, structured way. And we would like to identify the handicap that the child might have at different levels and give him instruction at different levels and keep him in a specialized program till that point where he can compete successfully. At the same time, not keep him so specialized that he isn't within the entire structure. There must be an integration so that he does work with the entire group. But it has to be all the way through until we know that he can be on his own.
Does that answer your question?
No. Because he said nothing that I would say. For instance, the books that I think one field that you might that you probably, you know, just overlooked, but I suppose you would say it was important, are books. In the ideal, you know, I mean, they just told you you can have the proper books. What are the proper books that we could use that would accelerate this achievement or this success with the white counterpart? And how far away are you from it?
How far are we? The research in even developing texts specifically in this area, where even for the one that is going bilingually is at least 3 years away on a structured basis only in two content areas, and it hasn't even been evaluated as to its effectiveness. We're in looking and surveying the different areas. We're not there. But we do know this, though, that there are certain things culturally that have to be placed in the curriculum, and these have to be identified so that they become part of the regular curriculum.
Yeah, I
think this is what you're getting at. How do we put in this idea of the self-image into the youngster so that he becomes proud immediately from the first day that he goes in and he doesn't feel inferior? You're saying, why should he be given Greek and Roman mythology when he can be given Mayan and Aztec mythology with the same sort of legend so that he has a pride?
That's not what I was thinking, but what I was thinking, and not that that isn't a bad idea, but you know, when he goes in as in kindergarten or first grade, mythology is, you know, he's more interested in fantasy, you know, a child there. That, I think, could come probably in social science, but I'm talking about the first three grades. I'm talking about the books that he can relate to from, you know, it's not so distant from his home. His home, and his home may not even know anything about Mayan civilization, but from his home to the schoolroom, that it doesn't make him into a schizophrenic.
Well, this is what we're going to attempt to do in this next project.
That would be to you the ideal.
The ideal is still to be developed, and we'd like to work towards it.
In comparing that program, then, which seems to be, you know, I mean, it's still very abstract, to the program you have now. Now, in order to implement the program you have now, which, as I understood, only hits quite a few, very few children. Now, I want to know what happens to the ones that it hasn't hit, and then how long it would take to implement it under the program you have now to the children that are in it, and what happens to the children that didn't get in it.
Well, first of all, again, my program is not an operational one. It's merely for demonstration purposes, hoping that we can develop in a 3-year longitudinal study those things that will be effective for the rest. In the meantime, Mr. Wingard and I are working together. He has the rest of the program. Dr. Hull has the operational. And we hope to work together so that those things that we try out, that other teachers can adapt. It has to be transportable.
So then we are...
No, your question is directed to the wrong person on that particular level.
Well, then, no, I'm going back to demonstration then. So then, actually, we are years away, really, from helping the child today, other than a token thing like this.
No, I'm not saying that you have to be years away in attacking the problem.
But I mean, in implementing to
but
a
you're saying to come in with that material that ensures success. That's like to say that the district has the answer for the Negro student, and if they make a full commitment that it's there.
Yeah, but you're talking in that language, and I'm talking
okay.
As a child. I'm talking what's going to happen to these children today.
Oh, but it's about, all right. You know, and this is not directly related to this, but it's related to operations. And I know about the inner city, which you're going to talk about, but presuming you have the ESL, which is a very fine program, it's working optimal. What's in your plans, Dr. Hall, to eliminate tracking, which once the child comes out of ESL and he takes up an AIQ test, which is culturally biased or any other of the various standardized tests, and he's tracked into a remedial class, which was designed originally to isolate kids, a Skelly-Wright decision, I'm sure you know about, in which he points this out very clearly in Washington, where he enjoined tracking for this very reason. What's the future plan to eliminate tracking so that not only the Mexican-American, but other kids who may come from areas where they don't have the culture or they don't have the background to take the B'nai or to take other kinds of tests, and they're tracked or they use a stay nine, and teachers say these kids are dumb and they're going to go in. Now, your inner city provides for 1 year, maybe three at most, ninth, and you're going to start in the 10th, and you're going to eliminate tracking, and maybe if you get refund, 11, 12. What about English? What about, this is for social studies, what about math? What about all the areas where these kids are tracked now, even when they're in the ESL, and they come out of this school district brainwashed? That they're dumb, and that's what we're producing, and that's pitiful. What are you going to do about that?
Yeah, comment on it.
My problem, Carol, is I still felt the need of answering back on the other, but I'll take Bob's question if that's the one that's on the top of the table. Bob, I think you do know that part of the commitment of inner city, and this is the one thing that disturbs me, we're talking the inner city action now rather than ESL per se, does have a commitment to do a considerable breaking of the tracking that has existed, as you have told us many times, at San Diego High School. As you have indicated by your comment, yes, our planning calls for it to be progressive, to make a sufficient effort at the 10th grade next year so it is a real effort and changes take place, and then the next year to move to the 11th and to the 12th, and in the 3 years to have in fact covered the whole gamut, the whole program of San Diego High School for its 3 years. This is part of the commitment. It is something that must be worked out with the faculty, and therefore it would be inappropriate for me to propose to say what the details are, but I am saying it is a commitment, and it will depend upon its being worked out with faculty in this year ahead and immediately thereafter. Now that's half of what you rate.
I'll get to you in a minute, Anderson.
The other half of what Mr. Russell just raised has to do with the incorrect testing and finding of certain individuals as being mentally retarded who should not be. This also is one of the, it's related to this, is one of the commitments of inner city. We have already increased very markedly the amount of time of psychologists being spent on the retesting of those who on a earlier test were found to be in the category of EMR. We already have been working at the retesting, and this will be a very conspicuous action in the period from late August through into October at both Memorial and San Diego High, for the purpose of, by re-examination, identifying those who, when first tested, their ability to perform may have justified their being in EMR classes and The deficit commitment is to retest them, and those who should be out, get them out and into regular classes. Again, this is part of that same purpose to get rid of the damaging part of the tracking that we've commented on before. Now, this is definitely commitment, and it's part of the funding that is in the city.
The thing that bothers me, you're still saying we're going to test. Where you're going to use a test which is slanted. I mean, you're going to, how much do you think they're going to grow in terms of take this test if the test has questions on it that are not even related to their culture? I mean, how many of you in here know what a chaperobe is? If you were taking an IQ test, how would you say a chaperobe would be used? Would you use it to plant a garden? Would you use it as a piece of furniture? Would you use it to repair your car? How would you use it? How would you use it, Mr. Butler?
I don't even know what it is.
I would say I'm sorry. Well, you're gifted, but the point I'm making is that term is, as you know,
Rogelio Torres Guerrero has made tests and has made an intensive study in border children, and the tests have been developed. I'm surprised that they don't know about him, because he has worked and made intensive research in this field, and tests have been made for Mexican Americans.
Before Anderson gets in, then it's the Anderson, Bert, and then Larry, and I see another hand over here. Dr. Hall, you got something else.
There's still a charge here, and may I answer it with a fact?
All right, go ahead. Wait a minute, down at the other end of the table. Richard.
Another meeting.
Mr. Wong. All right, we'll tolerate that for a second. Go ahead, Dr. Hall.
In the new staffing financed with inner city funds, we have an avid psychologist being assigned primarily to Memorial, and he is a Mexican-American psychologist, right?
Is he across the hall from us now?
No. And in addition, we have Dr. Moreno here, who is in as part of Herb's new project, but he also is a qualified psychologist, and this is why, to a very considerable degree, he was selected and employed for the evaluation part of Herb's program. So by two additional people who are, I think I'm correct in both cases, bilingual and by culture, aware of the culture of those to be tested, and again, there is certain pattern to the giving of the psychological test, even the individual one. But in the hands of a skilled psychologist, interpretation and judgment can take care of the very problem that Mr. Russell was raising as one that leads to wrong classification. Now, may I make one more?
One more?
And may I just put in the record? I think this is information that is worth noting. In all of the compensatory education schools, 18% of the children there are Spanish surname or Mexican American children. In all of the EMR classes in all of these schools.
Would you tell us what EMR first?
Educational Memory Retard.
Okay.
In all of the comp-ed schools, the percent in those classes happens also to be 18%. So I'm only saying, yes, I've acknowledged already there undoubtedly has been some cultural, racial, language bias on some of the exams. We need to do it over again. But the results still are that we have not classified a disproportionate number of the children in these areas into the EMR class. It's only proportionate to their particular subgroup.
Any question on that point?
What percent of Mexican-American children are currently now classified EMR? Do you have that in school?
I don't know it for the city as a whole. I am saying in the comp-ed schools, of which there are 35 are elementary and 10 or second.
In a school like Balboa, Roosevelt, Memorial, San Diego High, those, the percent of those schools.
These are included in this
50%,
60%?
No.
18% of the children in this group of schools collectively are Mexican American, and 18% of those in EMR classes are likewise Mexican American.
All right, don't wait for me after this. Edison, you're on now. Your hand's been up a long time. Edison, Bert, Larry, the gentleman over here, and another hand over here, Mike, and go right on around in that order, and you got it.
I'd like to put this question to Mr. Windsor. When he first started off, he started talking about the children that were in these special classes for about a year, and then they were introduced into the classroom. I was wondering what type of a teacher this first year, you know, after the preliminaries and everything, I mean, you know, that next year, I wanted to know what type of teacher these kids were subjected to. I know that you have two circuit teachers, you call them, I guess. You know, they go around from place to place. The answers I've been getting, I hate to be cynical, but frankly, I'm not happy with the answers I've been getting back. So this is the way I'm going to put it. I would think that you would have a teacher that could speak Spanish, because if the child is in difficulty, naturally she would have to rescue him. But it comes to my mind that you have an aide in the classroom that probably could speak.
No, in answer to your question, these teachers, two in each of three schools, six teachers who are have these self-contained ESL classes to which I think you're alluding here. Each of those is a Mexican-American, and each speaks Spanish and English.
Now, what about the ones that don't speak English?
Now, I'm saying that when a child, and this class is for that child his regular class, this word self-contained merely is a sort of jargon that we use to differentiate between a child who remains with one teacher in one class all day long and a child who's pulled out of a self-contained class, and we use the word then pull out, to refer to a child who maybe has only a few minutes per day of some kind of instruction. Now, these children in these six classrooms are with teachers who are bilingual, and they are getting instruction in English as a second language, plus modification of the regular instruction at that level that these children can take at the level of their English. And
second year.
No, I'm talking about 1 year. I'm saying that in general, these children. Oh, well, let me go further. The two classes in each of these schools are not related in sequence. One is in the upper grades. The other is in the primary grades. So, for instance, let us take the upper grades. Let us say that a child arrives in the school district and in the residence area of that particular school, and he is in the age bracket of, say, a fourth or fifth grader, but he knows no English. He would be assigned to this class, let us say that's the fourth grade. Now, in order to keep the size one which is workable, he probably can stay in that class for a year. This is not predetermined because we want him to stay there for a year, but because there is only one such class, as a new child comes into the district and speaks no English, those children who have had the most amount of experience in that class get, I would use the terminology, pushed out, in the sense that the number of classes is not adequate to the need. So this child then goes into a regular class. Now, I think another part of your question is, what is the continuation of instruction for this child after you've had this very specialized instruction?
Yeah.
And the answer to that is, in most schools, it is not very good. It is not specialized instruction. I won't say it's not very good. To the extent that the teacher is sensitive, there are some things that the teacher can do, but I have to say to you that most of our teachers are not trained, regular classroom teachers, are not trained in how to cope with this child. They don't know what his needs are. They are not equipped with the special techniques. Now, a very excellent teacher will individualize to the extent that he can for this child.
Well, this is the point that I want to bring up.
Yes.
I really can't see how this pupil can relate to the teacher if the teacher doesn't understand the pupil's needs, and he can't relate to her because he doesn't understand English. And
well, at this point, of course, he knows some English because he's had, let us say, a year with the teacher who spoke Spanish. So when he came in, the teacher could relate to him in Spanish, and then the weaning process is beginning.
Well, you see, at that point, this elementary child is just probably good morning teaching, hello Dick and hello Susie. Well,
then it's a trauma.
Point. But I mean, frankly, when you get engrossed in a conversation in English, English is a very hard language to learn. And after just 1 year of instructions, or not even a whole year of instructions, this elementary child is not equipped to understand what the teacher is saying. So therefore, possibly an aid should be added into the class in that particular class. But suppose the aide gets sick, then what happens to the child then? You have a situation that's going to just revolve like a door.
You are correct. You have defined the
now,
problem.
Now, how are you going to stick a plug in to stop it from turning? This is what I'm interested in.
Well, I'm interested in this also. And you defined the problem as I think I tried to define it earlier.
I'd like to take a look at the ESL program in terms of the entire effort of the district to try to deal with a problem that's quite massive. I think maybe we should direct statements for that area. I think that in general, there's a frustration amongst the Mexican-American community, as is shown here, that there's been, toward the school district, there's been a very low-scale effort to attack the problem that is massive. It's quite as simple as that. You have to go through the process of a small demonstration program to demonstrate something that we know it already exists, and not only does it exist, but in a large scale. So I would direct my question in terms of, I really think you're behind the eight ball in attacking a major problem that you and I know exists in terms of the educational attainment of the Mexican-American in California and in San Diego. Secondly, I even have a question in terms of the entire concept of ESL. I think it seems to me it's like an acceptable method of, again, stripping the Mexican-American of his background and his heritage by telling him you should learn English as a second language and forgetting to help him retain some of his cultural background, to help him retain some of the language, Spanish language, so that he can not only come out as a student with having learned English and forgotten Spanish, but coming out of the program as a student knowing English and Spanish equally well, knowing the English history, American history and Spanish history, American culture and Mexican culture equally well.
Right.
So I think, even from the demonstration part of it, I think you're lacking in terms of the other side of it.
Well, let me say again, philosophically, I agree with you.
Okay, well then I would say, let's stop with a small demonstration program and really attack the problem on a large scale. You're stating that after the demonstration program, you're only going to have two schools, Lowell and Memorial. And I question...
That's to her.
Okay.
Because the district's operating program is what I've tried to describe, and it is not what Herb described. What Herb will be doing in his project will be in addition to all else that the district is doing, both what it is doing currently and will continue to do, and that which will be added, as Dr. Hall indicated, through the inner city. In addition to this, which is operational, comes now the demonstration aspect, which Ibarra heads up.
Carol, just a quick point. I do want to say that we're talking about the immigrant child or the child of immigrant parents. Now, this is a small proportion. We're talking here as if the only child, Mexican-American child, that has trouble is the child that doesn't know English. Now, we have 3 and 4 generations of Mexican-American that have not made any progress. under the circumstances. Now, I want to state right here that a very small minority have a Spanish problem. A big majority of the Mexican Americans that may not even know Spanish have a much more serious problem, a much more subtle problem, a much more intense and psychological problem, and we are ignoring that here, and I think, for the record, we should have time on that issue, maybe another 7 meetings.
Right. Mr. Wingard, not only to agree with me philosophically, but I think practically we should do something about it.
Well,
you and I can agree philosophically.
No, but understand something. I can't. I mean, in my position, I think you must talk to Dr. Hall in
Dr.
terms
Hall,
of this.
Well,
may I precede this with one answer, though, Mr. Rios, and that is this. That one
may
very...
May I interrupt just for a second?
Yes.
The reason I'm saying this is because I receive the products.
That's right.
I receive the products, and the products are... no good.
Yeah.
And the products of the school system illustrates quite readily that the school system is not preparing the Mexican American to go on to college. The school system is not preparing the black person to go on to college. That's why I'm concerned about attacking this thing on a math issue.
I think that it is true generally, speaking for English as a second language, that except for those teachers who are specialist teachers in English as a second language, the majority of teachers do not fully comprehend the nature of the problem, including the problem related to proficiency in English, but the problem of competency in subject area, or lack of competency that develops because you know Spanish but not English, and you therefore are falling ever increasingly behind in the regular curriculum and competency in the Spanish language. Now, part of the dialogue that is taking place here is taking place continuously within the district. We're trying to get teachers to understand this problem. And an awful lot of your indictment is true in the sense that this has been the past. On the other hand, the sensitivity of people in the district to the needs, I think, is ever increasing. And as this increases, this problem is going to change. Now, that's the only part of this that I can talk to. I can't talk about the money necessary to implement the kind of program that you and I both want.
Well, it's incumbent on you as an educator or as an administrator to find that money, because the problem is here. And this is the reason for the dialogue. It's incumbent on you, not on me, but on you, to find that money.
All right, Larry, we were waiting for you to get in, and Larry, and then over here, and Mike. Oh, the lady over there, I forgot. Is that Mel there? I don't know.
Before I ask my question, perhaps I could share a couple of personal experiences, and I think the question will make a little bit more sense. I taught the year before last in Memorial. I had a very limited experience. I taught there just the 1 year. But with my experience at Memorial, that a number of the Mexican-American children there were really not getting the mathematics instruction or the history instruction, and that even though some of these students, as they told me, were in special classes, not mainly retarded classes, I should clarify, but in special classes to get some help with their English, that in the meanwhile, they were being subjected to the regular instruction in history and in arithmetic and so forth. And so on many occasions, students would come in at lunchtime, we'd meet, or before school, and they would sit down with the mathematics textbook. And together, very individually, these kids were really swinging. They really knew how to deal with the problems. In fact, they knew modern math certainly better than I. But I was very much impressed, however, with the idea that these kids were being terribly frustrated, even though they might be getting English as a second language instruction or a short period of time of help with English, because for the other period of time during the school day and for the entire year, they were still in a classroom where the information, the materials were being taught in English. And so the question I'm raising is really that even if we had, quote, the most beautiful ESL program, which we need, would we not perhaps find that by the time the children were able to speak English, quote, properly, that they might be so far behind academically that they would in fact be pushed out? And I know that many of the kids were psychologically hurt. I mean, they felt down, et cetera. Well, that'd be one, that's the one question. And as long as I have the floor, I'd like to point out one other thing. That Bob raised it in terms of testing. And again, I'd have to just cite an example, and you be free to generalize to the extent that you want to. Dr. Hall mentioned the idea about retesting. And this was an experience that I had, again, and this happened three times at Memorial. This girl, Gloria, who was a black girl, was in my class for 2 months, and this was in English. And she was doing very well in English. But then she came up to me one morning with a transfer slip, and she was literally crying, and she said, "Mr. Carlin, how come I have to leave your class?" And sure enough, she was being transferred out of the regular English class into a mentally retarded English class, because at that time, the counselor had gotten her test score, and she had tested out as mentally retarded. Now, I hadn't been notified, I hadn't been consulted, I hadn't been contacted in any way. The next thing I know, the child was being transferred from class. Now, when I approached the counselor said, and I think that in all sincerity, thought that he was really doing the right thing, that, well, we'll retest her. But the point was that she was going to be retested after she had been transferred back into the mentally retarded class. Now, in this instance, the girl was not taken out because we complained about it. And this did happen two other times. So I'm even wondering whether or not, quote, retesting is really the answer. And I'd also just throw out, I taught much longer in middle-class Anglo-segregated school, and I think that testing children in those schools is also very psychologically damaging, that when we segregate children on the basis of intelligence, or so-called intelligence, that this too is damaging. It happens to be perhaps, in fact, more so, I'm sure, because of these other dimensions when we talk in terms of the segregated Chicano school or black school. Well, I would have given a speech, but how about the idea of teaching history, arithmetic, et cetera, in the languages?
In the languages of the native language, whatever it is we're talking about.
May I report as a fact the two things that have or are happening. One, within the past year, Mr. Carlin, the legislature took action so that it now is legal, as it was not when you were at Memorial, to teach in a language other than English. So we cleared a hurdle of law, and as part of the program finance in inner cities, at Memorial, I think I'm right, you better help me, it's two of the teachers there are bilingual teachers who will be teaching history or geography or science or arithmetic with the full freedom to do it bilingually. And if, as a point of fact, the student is capable of learning mathematics, which can be explained in either English or Spanish, there will be whatever language is used, will be used as appropriate. And part of the purpose, Mr. Carlin, is to protect this very psychological frustration that you so very well described. In other words, this is part of the action for next year.
Bob, you better go.
Yeah, I have to go. I want to enter this into the record, Dr. Hall. It doesn't have anything to do with this session, but the last time we were here, we got into a discussion on whether schools, and Dr. Rendon agreed with you, should be accountable for their records, their achievement tests, et cetera. And you said if you didn't think they should, we shouldn't identify schools. I'd like to read.
But wait a minute, then you've got two questions.
Just very brief.
You mean identify schools is what you're talking about?
Identify the make public the achievement results of the four schools so we can deal with them.
Okay.
The Kerner Report, in its section on education, it says, results of achievement and other tests should be made public on a regular basis. Quote, to increase the accountability of the public schools, the results of their performance should be made available to the public. Such information is available in some, but not all cities.
We see no reason for withholding useful and highly relevant indices of school, but not individual student performance, and recommend that all school systems adopt a policy of full public disclosure. I just want to enter that in the record because that seems to be an issue with what Dr. Rendon and what Dr. Hall said last time, and I think that this report is, at least some people have buried it, but it's supposed to be objective, and the people weren't exactly radical and carried it out, and they did consult with top people in education throughout the nation. I have to do it.
I'd like to direct, I have two questions. The first one I'd like to direct to Herb Ibarra. A while back you stated that there were some things that you had learned from research that the Mexican-American child did need in the curriculum. You know, I don't think you ever stated what they were. Could you give us some idea as to what these tangible things were that have been found to be definitely needed as a result of research?
We have seen that certain studies, and there haven't been very many in the field of curriculum, but that certainly when we have concentrated on the self-image of the child, having him appear as important as his counterpart anywhere, if there's a regular unit following this thing all the way through to where he always feels that he is in no way inferior to anybody, that this, as a structured item in the curriculum, will definitely have a big effect on this youngster, because you can always see it in any of these classes as the way this child reacts. Also, there have been items in certain texts in which the child has identified with the Mexican culture that have proven to be rather effective.
My second question is addressed to Dr. Hall. Isn't it true that there is a category of mental classification just above mentally retarded? It is sort of a gray area between EMR and the quote-unquote normal child. And I understand, I've heard from various sources, that it is a large, in terms of numbers of children involved, category. I think that the children that Estelle was talking about, the child that really has no language, that cannot speak English or Spanish, falls into this category. And perhaps we got to find out what percentage of our youngsters are in this gray area. I think, you know, that perhaps there is a danger of falling into the trap of using the symptomatic approach to problems. For example, the things you were talking about, giving the child pride in his heritage, simply creating a class in minority history relating to his background is not the answer. Why not solve the problem by putting the history into the regular history courses? You know, it's phony when you establish a separate specialized program. The testing situation, instead of retesting the child, why not initially test him in tests or with tests that have been developed by gentlemen such as Dr. Moreno that are not culturally biased? In other words, why not solve the problem at the inception instead of creating a phony situation elsewhere? ESL is fine, but if it's not integrated into the regular program, it's worthless.
Again, I accept these points as valid, and this is the direction we're going. I've already acknowledged that some of the things that have happened in the past were less than those I can unqualifiedly support. Your point is valid.
Can I mention something to Dr. Hall? You talked about psychologists. Now, are these even if these psychologists are Mexican-American, the Mexican from our area really don't believe in psychologists. They believe in curanderas, and they figure, well, that's like people, you know, the herbs and all this bit. Now, our people are so frustrated that you say you're going to have some Mexican-American psychologists,
that have been and orientated like the Anglo, you know, pop. Because I took psychology myself, and this is one of the questions that I asked my instructors, is what can you tell me about the Mexican, and how can we use your type of psychology in our community? He didn't have no answer.
Well, my question still has not been answered about the gray area, the group of youngsters that are above the EMR.
Well,
isn't it a fact?
There is no sharp category just above the EMR. Yes, there are those students who have an apparent level of ability that is above that, but not a great deal above that, that are the EMR. And these are the slow learners that are to be found in every school in the city.
Underachievers are slow learners, because sometimes that's a little bit different.
It is different, and I would use two different terms. We have those that
are the underachievers.
The underachievers are those who have ability to do average and better, but are not at the present doing that. They are underachievers.
Are they considered in this gray area again?
No. I mean, I would, in my mind at least, and I tried to say, there is no sharply defined group. It's only that which is in the mind of any one of us educators. We know that there are these that have ability above the level of the mentally retarded, that for them I use, for myself at least, the term slow learner. And there are gradations in slow learning. It may be the person just barely average if it's in a class that is quite demanding. He would be a slow learner in such a class. And it is a vague grouping. It is not a sharply defined grouping.
Mr. Hall, is it mandatory for these students who have been tested to go into these classes, or do the parents have a say in this?
I'm glad you asked the question. It is not mandatory. We give the test. It is our district requirement that we ask the parents' approval for the placement in the EMR classes. And we do have those where parents have said, no, you don't want it. And when that happens, they are not placed in these classes. We tell them, if you're in the class, it will have only 15 to 18 in the class, as contrasted with 32. This is the advantage of being in this class. But I repeat, we do not require anyone to be in an EMR class when the parents record they don't want it.
Is that in other
carefully words, explained to them?
Very carefully.
In other words, if parents were alerted, and I know if I had children going to school and they were tested low, and I had to give my permission for them to be placed in a special class, and I'm not saying that the teacher is incompetent, but just the fact that my child is being segregated or moved away from the general program of the school is very, that EMR situation is, I don't understand why parents have not risen in numbers to oppose it. I just really don't.
It's not carefully explained, Dr. McKesson.
Well, this is the point. A lot of parents, a lot of parents, when they are told that this class is smaller and perhaps it can help your child faster catch up with the rest of the class, they will accept it. Other parents, I know plenty of children who are just frustrated to death because they're in them, and they are unaware of the fact that this is a voluntary thing. So this is a failure in communication, in human relations, or what have you. And this is the kind of thing that ought to be worked out in school community dialogue and discussion. It ought to be worked out just what is this EMR class and just how do you get in it. And it ought to be clearly defined that this is voluntary. You don't want to be in, you don't want your child in that. Your child's not ever in that.
I would say that probably the Community Action Council, and I'm sure that you have some very dedicated people, because if you can get 200 students in an ESL program in 2 or 3 days, I'm sure that if you're really interested in keeping our Mexican Americans and our black children out of the EMR classes, then it would behoove us to get out to the community and just put a stop to this. Let the parents know that that they have to give the permission in order for these children to go into the EMR classes.
Well, I wouldn't quite go that far. I'd go to where the parent is made fully aware of all the implications and then makes the choice, because some parents will still make that choice. But I want them to know exactly what it is that they're choosing. Again, you're a counselor, you probably know this better than I do. A lot of times counselors feel like, it seems to me, that they know what's best for the child. And so they might not make this clear, that the parents have to make this decision. The counselor will advise them to go in.
Well,
I
know this reading program that was implemented in several schools, that I guess this year or last year, was you were supposed to get the permission of the parents. Some of the students were already enrolled in the classes, and I was told later, about months later, to contact these parents and get permission. The parents told me, well, my child is already in it. Why should I have to sign? You see, so I just... I question all of these special little groupings that you have to meet needs. I sort of wonder the purpose. I wonder how much the parent is really being involved, you know, the sincerity of the program. Is it the funds you're interested in? Is it the money that you're interested in? I know the EMR program is getting quite a bit of funds. The students going in there are... I don't know, how much do they pay for each?
Let me say it this way only. We do get additional state funds, so that it costs the district no more of local tax money to have a teacher for 16 children than to have another class with 32 children. In other words, we get the extra cost to have two teachers for 32 children rather than one teacher for 32 children. This is a state funding, but there is no profit made. It's only that the difference is financed with state funds.
Okay, over here, and then some of you better get in there because we're going to run out of time.
Don't run out of time. I want to ask a
question. Well, we're going to start. You'll be all right. Okay.
Well, my name is Bob Glenn, and I've taught for 10 years in this San Diego City School District. I've taught everywhere from Memorial, La Jolla, I made the socioeconomic circuit, taught the junior high school, I taught the junior high school. I'd like to attack this tracking system in a way. I think its effects are pernicious, because if they obstruct the mobility of people from one social and economic group to another, regardless of what color they may be, there is a very refined method of separating the basics from the intermediate, from the semi-upper to the middle-upper to the upper-upper and so forth, very analogous to the structure of our social and economic system in this country. And I feel that as long as we accept the ball game being played under these rules and hire more psychologists to further refine these definitions, then all we're going to do is make our shackles in these class categories more secure. That's how we're spending our spare time. Instead of hiring extra people for the instructional program where it's needed. Now, there have been three people here who have attacked the tracking system, and all three have been classroom teachers who have seen day to day the effect of this tracking system. Now, I think that I'd like to see come out of these dialogue sessions some commitment from the district that they will not only get discussion going and have programs to eliminate tracking in the inner city, but I'd like to see, as long as we're in ESL and all its ramifications and related aspects, attack this tracking system all throughout. And let's not be swindled by the statement that, well, it's needed in certainly subjects like mathematics and so forth, that separation is made anyway. You can't take trigonometry until you're prepared to take trigonometry. But in the social studies area, where all of the disciplines come into discussion in the classroom, anthropology, economics, history, and all facets, to take these kids and separate them into their different so-called ability levels, which really is nothing but a social and economic background level, and to continue this practice gives you classes where it's very quiet, kind of dull, slow participation. You don't get those sparks in that classroom situation that you get when the counselors goof up and get the wrong kids in there, and you have to get all kinds of things happen. And Joe, who's sitting over there, doesn't quite get it, will never get it in one of those slow, so-called slow classes, especially this gray area, these basic classes. He's not going to get it because he asked Susie over here, and she doesn't know either. But if he's in a class where you have the range in that class, he will ask Susie, and she will fill him in, because a lot of that instruction, in my experience in 10 years, is that maybe the major part of the instruction comes from discussion among the kids themselves. The teacher can facilitate this, but he's not going to pour it in like such. So I just want to sum up what I had to say here as a hope that this tracking system itself, the assumptions that underlie it, in order to make it easier to teach larger classes, because you ostensibly get them all the same, you know, that is what needs to be attacked. And that we get heterogeneous classes, which is education alone, for kids from different social and economic backgrounds, together in those classes.
When I'm staying here, I've got to break in. All this is sheer sophistry. Branch has stated the problem, Bert has stated the problem, Estelle has stated the problem. And all the administrators are sitting around and agreeing, but yeah, boy, you've got a bad problem. There's problems all over. We're shoving kids out. We're shoving kids out of the ESL classes before they're ready. But what we're saying is, we're tired of these bland statements by you. We're tired of hearing, yeah, that's valid. You've got a good point here. I think what Frank is asking, I think what Bert and Estelle and every other person is asking in here, is for a massive commitment by the school district to eradicate these wrongs. And that's what we have to address ourselves to. We've got to have a commitment. And what we're saying, I think we're all really saying to Dr. Hall, to Mr. Wingate, to everybody in here, is that you have an obligation to go to that school board and to get them to make that commitment, even if it means a few less marching bands, a few less gymnasiums, a few less football fields with lights on them. And that's what you have to do.
I believe Estelle had mentioned earlier what I had to say. I just wanted to ask, how deeply are the children that are pulled out for these special programs, how deeply is a study made as to who needs? I've had a brief experience in tutoring. I found that the only children that were pulled out for a tutoring program were those that were just absolutely could not speak English, period. But there were so many, many that had such deep problems that could get along, you know, with speaking the ordinary, everyday language that was needed to communicate if you wanted to go to the bathroom or get a drink of water, that they were less in the regular program, and only those that needed it, just the children from Tijuana, as it turned out. I only had one child from Mexican-American, the others were from Tijuana, that needed the English, and were some of them were psychologically ready to compete off the start. All they needed was to learn the language, but the Mexican-American child that I got was not ready to compete. It would take many, many years, and he had very deep needs that were ignored.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something after I get in generally louder. Said it generally, did it very well, because I was concerned there with all day with all the programs just talking about what we're going to do there with the kids, you know, like Dr. Hall said, we're going to retest the kids and things like this. What I'm concerned about there is what we're going to do there with the tests what we want to do there with the tracking system. You know, this is what I'm concerned about. We're always going to assume that there's something wrong with the kids, and I think Dr. Hall said that there's nothing wrong there with the test. There's nothing wrong with it. That's what I like that.
I don't think I said that.
Well, I don't know what you said. That's what I know.
Cheryl.
Because it was never answered.
I think despite all the discussion, which has really been a two-hour catharsis on presenting ideas, I think that in all this discussion, I think that we have to face the reality that the San Diego Unified School District has failed in creating a learning situation for that Mexican-American child. Now, you can bring your model programs in. I've heard Memorial brought up many times before. We know what we have at Memorial, but we don't have anything else which would even compare to Memorial in the other areas of need. I think we have to face the reality. When Herbie Botta said that we have a 72% dropout rate in California, I would like to say we are very concerned now. When Bert says he's not getting the people in college for his EOP program, we're very concerned about that. You tell us there are no Mexican Americans around when you start talking about hiring for positions. Why are there not Mexican Americans? This is what we're concerned with. I think we're even concerned about getting our students out of high school, not just college. We have to look at areas of testing, counseling, training teachers effectively so that they can meet the needs of the Mexican Americans. This is the reality. All this other garbage that was presented, we don't care. The reality is that for the last 100 years, the Mexican American hasn't been helped in education. Now we want to say, do something about it, or else if we go to the community, we're going to have to do something about it, and at that point, we don't know what's going to happen. All I can say is we're going to organize.
Yes, and then George.
I'm
going to make a personal reaction. Would you tell us when you are again?
I'm the other biggest, and I work in community relations, and really, I don't know whether I should be speaking or not, but I'm going to, because you have many problems and many things that personally I have experienced. First of all, my father was an immigrant from Mexico. He had a very fourth grade education. My fourth grade, he had no education. I did not have a language, either Spanish. I couldn't communicate in Spanish, and I couldn't communicate in English when I was a child. I didn't have. I speak with an accent. You can hear that. I grew up saying Tildo. I just couldn't pronounce the words. We never had a class in our school where they taught us Spanish. So we learned to speak. And I speak the way I speak now, and I'm not ashamed to speak. I'll tell you exactly how I feel and what I'm feeling. These programs are good. I mean, you're looking at all these programs. But yes, I have a boy, which I'm going to put in a program school in September because still I do not feel that you have a school in Southern San Diego that I could send my boy to. Now, another thing that Mrs. Chacon said, she said our children are not being taught Spanish because they wanted to learn the English properly. My boy does not speak Spanish. He speaks better English than I do. Just as good as Dr. Wingate, Dr. Hall. And eventually, what I want for him is for him to sit in a position like the state attorney, Mr. Esau. That's what I want for him. But yet, I don't have a school where I can send my boys to. But, I mean, I'm listening to your program. 1 year at ESL would have done him good. But yet, he doesn't speak the Spanish. Because I thought, well, I'm not going to wait and have these people solve my problem. He said, I'm going about it the wrong way. I should have taught him Spanish. I know I should, but he doesn't speak the Spanish. But he speaks better English than I do. When he graduates from college, I want him to graduate from a big school like MIT. One of the top 10. That's all I want. Simple. I sit here and listen to everybody, all their gripes, all these problems, they touch me. And I'm very emotionally upset right now. Thank you.
George.
At one time, Chairman, it was mentioned about the teachers who were in these special programs for the young people to have sensitivity training so that they might be understandable to the human needs and desires of the particular students that they were teaching. It was related, I believe, at that time that they were going through such a program. My question was whether or not the people that were given this sensitivity training were sensitive themselves. I'm not speaking about the PhD, not a sociologist, because the book's very easy to read. I'm tired of the person who has read a book to come down and tell me something from that book. This country was based upon that book, and that book is proven to be a damn failure because there was no human value within that book. So in this sensitivity training, if they're going to have all these special programs, these programs will not be worth a damn unless they get some people who are heading these programs that have some human attitudes and human feelings for the people that they're teaching. That's why. I know it sounds very humorous when you think of someone who comes in here, say like maybe Frank, John, or myself, and really blast on the racial situation to come in and teach sensitivity. But if you don't get someone like us, you're going to be in the same damn bag you've been in all the time out of that book, and that's what you've been in all the time before, and you're going to have the same black Mexican-American kids getting out with the same attitude they were getting out before. I'm speaking of having people who are sensitive to the needs of brown and black people teach sensitivity to these teachers, or you keep them damn teachers away from my kids.
That's a very good point. I'm glad you brought it out. Now, since Herb and Mr. Wingard know the situation in San Diego High, and you can't change people overnight, I want to know, are we going to have the same staff teaching the ESL program next year?
Nothing to say about staff.
I talked to the lady that has charge of curriculum for ESL at length several times. She is British. And I know she has spent some time in San Ysidro, but I have talked to her at length, and she has no idea what I'm talking about when it comes to children or the kind of books children need. And the fact that she taught in San Ysidro guarantees me nothing as far as curriculum. And she is the one that is in position to accept books.
Mr. Wayne, good.
And God only that, she probably has tenure, and we can't do anything about removing her or putting someone else in.
Those nine teachers you have, are they all bilingual?
No.
Women?
You say it. But again, let me point out that we can only hire those people who say they want to teach in the summer.
No, but that's not the answer, man. I'm looking for answers.
You can want to stimulate that, I would believe.
Yes, I think the district can do things. That's correct.
And what role does the community have in hiring?
That's right.
That's
right.
I think is the key thing.
How many times have they really called, even people that they know, dialogue? I mean, I know that a lot of people are in the system are very hostile to me. Why are they hostile to me? Because I have brought up things that have never, they will not consider, but they have never called me to find out why I'm hostile to them, what I feel lacking. And I think that many people, I think that they might make a list of all the people that are hostile and call them and find out why.
Look, what we're saying right now is the people around here look at education and are viewing education as a patient in need of a major operation. And all the school district wants to do to this patient who needs an operation is put Band-Aids on them. That's what we're really talking about. We talked about a commitment before, and I haven't heard any response. I haven't heard Dr. Hall acknowledge that he should go to Dr. Daler, and he and Dr. Daler should go to the board and try and get this commitment. And I'm still waiting.
Who's going to run that inner city project? Is it a Mexican American or a black? The inner city project that you were talking about.
In the introduction, indicated that Norman Hauser is the director for the 7 School Inner City Project.
My husband, who has had a marvelous background, and I think has never been called to become involved. Now, I say maybe he should have gone there, but I think that all of them know enough that he would bring, because he has a typical background for this, but he has never been called to be involved. And I believe there are many like him, and I think at times when you, for instance, the teacher that Frank saw, I think of here was a man that could bring something from his own direct experience and from his knowledge, and I don't think he's let the really too much prostitution take place within him from the university, USC, where he got it, where Dr. Guzman has indicted USC's teachings of Mexican Americans. So I think that the community, the people that are interested in minority education, have not been realistic in the fact that they have not called upon the community to find out what it is. They have let other psychologists from wherever. And like Mike Amador said, maybe we need a curandera telling them something. That's a real psychologist, because that's the psychologist of the street.
Right. Can you answer my question, please? The gentleman who's going to lead the inner city project. What are there Mexican American or Black equally qualified to direct this program? Why is it that each time we have a program that's going to be directly affecting our Mexican American or Black communities, we always pick a white person up there to direct
that's
the program?
Right.
Can
you join that?
And have you really?
What are your qualifications, Mr. Hauser? Please. As direct relationship to Mexicans.
So I would have to intervene there. I think we have to keep it beyond that.
All right.
Now, you've already asked the question. I realize that. But we have to keep it away, and you know what I'm referring to.
Okay.
We can't do it that way. You can have Dr. Hall react, as Frank was trying to get him to it. He wishes there directly. We're going to have another, we didn't get it to the day, of course, as we said. We might not even get to B. So we didn't get into the details of the inner city, and next week we're going back to the police, and then 2 weeks later, the interim committee, you know, can get this going again.
Or the child that doesn't speak English. Or the first, second, and third generation Mexican American child. We haven't gotten to that.
Dr. Hall,
no, we didn't get to that.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
That when you send any teacher, you know, into our barrio, the Harvard Center, that to teach the adults of that area, if they can be bilingual.
One of our problems is we do not have enough bilingual teachers. We
can move the children.
Let me say it back. If you have those that you have concerns about that are being assigned there that you think are not well qualified, then will you let me know personally those that you have concerns about, and on that basis we can and will proper review.
Good.
So
you gotta get people in the community before it gets to that stage.
Sure.
Part of the hiring process. Not
that's
complain
right.
Complain about it later on and see them.
And you reach out and develop an adequate program for developing this, because you are an educational system. I believe this is realistic.
I think it's only true. I don't think it's only fair also that the Mexican American community be consulted, or the Black community be consulted. If this the program is going to be coming in now, it's going to be run by an angle which we've always had up there telling us or directing our program. Now, this is something that we're talking about also. I know there are Mexican Americans who are equally qualified to run this program.
The ad hoc committee that was chosen for the inner city project, there was not very much sensitivity. In spite of the fact that it was all Mexican Americans, there was not one woman, Mexican American mother, found or reached out to be on that program, on that committee. And so then we're also talking about third-class citizens, which might be the Mexican-American woman.
Mr. Chairman, my problem is this. We were prepared to make a report on inner city, and we're supposed to be having a discussion on ESL, which is very appropriate. We agree that's the way it should be. But now we have the frustration that we have a report that would answer many of the parts of the questions that are being raised. We were prepared to get the facts out, but because the discussion went in line with dialogue, which was requested and was appropriate, now we have the frustration that I look at the clock, it's 12 o'clock, it's nowhere possible to deal with the problems that are being raised, and we had asked for and thought we had the opportunity of a 20-minute presentation of the facts regarding the inner city. And it shouldn't come in backwards now.
I agree with the fact that we didn't get a chance to the inner city and it's coming up now and so forth. But I agree also we had to get the dialogue in there. You know, we could not have made it any meaningful at all. So your frustration is what all of us are feeling around this table, I'm certain. That we wish we had time, we're getting poked at it here and there, and Frank raised a basic question there, I realize that, but we just didn't have time, and we'll get back to it. I know that the patience
go shorter and so forth, but we will, as you know. Ben, and then, Frank, was you, were you?
Wait a minute, that's okay, I'll just hold tell the one else.
Okay, Ben.
As an Anglo, I've appeared before the Board of Education the last two meetings, asking essentially the same question that Frank has raised here, and they have not given anything resembling an answer, or any attempt to be convincing that they have really looked into Frank Sides' question.
Right, if you want to raise
it.
Right. And he's saying that, did you want to react to that now, this one?
May I only make the statement that, right or wrong, it is the district administration's contention. We hold to it very strongly that we have in fact chosen the best man for the job and that he is in fact better qualified for the job than any of those that Mr. Ellery may be asking us to consider in his place.
Even without knowing
more by your standards.
I said right or wrong, and I'm getting it as a fact that the district administration contends and holds to it and does not feel called upon to argue the case.
Obviously,
that the man is the best qualified.
But then you're not authentically trying to implement local control and self-determination in this. And this is the essence of the inner cities program, as I've understood it, from your brochure.
It is one of the essence, but not the essence of the issue.
Well,
you
don't know
the terms aren't in yet.
Was one of the qualifications that he be white?
No.
Administrative certificates and things of this nature.
Okay.
Dr. Hall commented that the problem is that there are not enough bilingual teachers, and of course we hear the same thing said about not enough black teachers. But I would like to ask Dr. Hall if there are any reasons why people from the community could not be hired as teacher assistants, for example, to work in the classroom with the teacher.
To answer this, this has been done in part, Mr. Crowley, and will be done to a very considerable extent as part of the funding of inner cities. And this we would have been reporting on if there had been time.
But, sir, may I just react to that? And if it works out right, that's great. But what about other schools? I understand that involves some 7 schools. I know there are 32 schools in the ESDA area. Again, it may be perhaps is the district willing to commit some of its own funds rather than just federal funds to get involved with that kind of thing if it's worthwhile.
And the hiring of the aides now?
Yes, members of the community to work with teachers.
Again, I go back to the fact that is reported. The district, with its funds, hired 3 teachers to travel to schools, and each of them is accompanied by a bilingual aide. And they are not credentialed people. Now, truly, this is that which happened last year. It is continuing for next year. It was not true 3 years ago. There is nothing in addition to this in next year's budget for a further expansion of the program, or you would call a commitment. It is not in the budget that the Board of Education is scheduled to adopt next Tuesday.
Okay, Muriel, and we're going to end it up in a couple of minutes, so don't leave yet. Muriel?
If I understood Mr. Wengard, he agreed with a couple of people on the other side of the table that enough was not being done. But granted, these kids had great frustration, and they were falling behind, and the system was failing them. Now, I'm not quoting you, but this is what I gathered you said. Have you ever said this publicly to the Board of Education? Have you ever said this publicly? I think that the people in the community at large know there's an ESL program, and they therefore presume that their Board of Education, their system is attending to the need. Why are these people complaining? If the people who are heading the program feel the program's inadequate, they must state so publicly, even if their job is jeopardized.
That's right.
Now, have you ever made your position public on it, how you feel? Because I think I have the feeling that you understand today.
I feel that I understand.
But have you ever stated this publicly?
I have stated it publicly on many occasions, but I have not stated it before the Board of Education.
No, well, you changed something there. What are you asking, has he stated publicly?
Has he stated publicly that what we're doing is not enough and that we aren't really beginning to tackle the needs of these kids and that we really aren't making any headway?
Where have you stated it publicly?
May I ask a question?
I want her to be satisfied. He said,
I'm not afraid of the question. I said it publicly to my own administrators, that is, those people to whom I'm responsible. Dr. Hall, in fact, in his initial remarks here, when he introduced me, said that I had made this need felt. So if publicly, let's talk about within the school district, that through voice and through memo, through attempt to persuade people at the lowest levels, namely teachers dealing with the kids, lowest levels of administration here, teachers dealing with the children, administrators dealing with the children and the teachers, and as well with administrators above me. Now, the need, as has been expressed by so many of you here, you're only re-echoing this, and in fact, some of you I know personally, and you know that I know what you're talking about. All right, that's one thing. I have also stated this publicly, in public places. For example, the district has a dialogue with an ad hoc committee for the better education, improved education of Mexican Americans. I've stated this before this group. I've stated at public meetings such as held at the Cavalry Church on the southeast side. That is, this is my view, and I hold it at not only personally, but you see, professionally. But within the structure, there are certain things that one in my position literally cannot do. At least, it's never been done before. Maybe I ought to do that, you know?
Right.
Maybe I should. I ask this kind of sensitivity from everyone here who is asking for sensitivity, and that is some sensitivity to what it is to work in a system. Somebody talked about it. All right, all of us who are then, now understand. Then we are sensitive, and some of the indictments that we all make, of course, are literally indictments against the system. And but at least you're sensitive to the difficulty of those of us who are in the system. Now, I said something else publicly, and I would say it here, and that is, I think it is one of the most wholesome things in the world that the community is saying things in places where some of us who are in the system have, you might say, for lack of courage, whatever it will be, we're a victim of the system, you see, but have not been saying in public places. And I congratulate everyone who is saying these things, because I feel them from my heart in the way that you feel them from your heart. You're saying that's not enough. I say that's not enough also.
Mira, and then back to George.
I want to take this one step further, you see, because every one of us is victims of the system. And our school board and our Board of Education and our administrators, in effect, represent the white community in which we live. And in my community, the people really believe that the school is doing the job, because the school has never had the courage to say, we aren't doing it. Now, I'm saying to you that if you don't see to it that the citizens know that you know we aren't doing the job, we aren't ever going to do it. And if it means getting on radio, if it means making public statements, we all have to jeopardize our position, or we perpetuate the system of which we are a product. Now, where do we change it? It's not enough to say it in this room. The union probably won't quote you, you see, because they know Gaylord wouldn't like to say it.
They're not here.
If they were here, they wouldn't quote you on this position.
Dr. Hall didn't answer that question, and she referred it to Dr. Hall.
May I only make this point of clarification, and that's what I tried to come in on before.
you used the word made a beginning, and I don't think Hal Wingard would have said that we had not made a beginning. We have made a beginning. You are saying, and Hal would say, that it is not yet enough. I am saying that part of Hal's effort has gone through administrative channels, has moved to the point of the superintendent, and during the past school year, the superintendent did go to the Board of Education and say, we have a large unmet need, we must make a beginning, it must be with our own funds, and that's why I'm talking so often back on the fact that we did hire three teachers with three bilingual aides as a beginning. Now, it had two things in it. It was an acknowledgement that the program was not adequate. And it was a start of committing local funds for this purpose. Now, part of the way the system works is that we get additions in the budget as increments over that which we had the year before. We got it in last year's budget. We can keep it in next year's budget. We set the stage for further additions by increments in future budgets.
Dr. Hall, if there were a smallpox epidemic in San Diego tomorrow, would we go through channels for 6 months or 2 years trying to allocate funds for inoculation? How many years, how many more kids will come out not equipped to function while we make beginnings? Now, it's taken us all these years to recognize that we must make beginnings. We must make more than beginnings, and I believe the citizenry would do it if anyone said we need to do it. I have really not heard anyone make efforts around the citizens.
Mr. Chairman, listen, this school, everybody knows what's wrong with the school system. We know that. Those of us who are in it know throughout. But the school system isn't the only thing here. San Diego's here. And the San Diego people are the ones that set up the school board and set the policy. And if you start talking about the system, you better be talking about the whole damn thing. And if you go around telling people that all we got to do is do it, bologna sausage. You're trying to pretend that there's some villain here, and somebody's a bad guy, and all these good white people out here, they're just waiting for you to give them leadership. Bologna, racism permeates the whole society. And they ain't just sitting out there waiting for you to give them leadership. Now, one or two liberal ones come down here and speak. But that leaves a whole 490,000 that ain't in favor of none of this you're talking about. Come down here week after week. You go there long. Instead, you didn't even want me to talk. I heard the talk. Go here long, these thieves that come down here. Where is the power in this society?
You're all right.
Okay. But I want to ask you Delta. And I know it's Dallas time, but you asked her a while ago, and I won't you ask me this next week. If he had the money, don't ask it that way. That ain't money's not enough. If you had the money and if you had the power, what would you do?
Bring it out in the thing.
If you had the money and if you had the power, what would you change in order to really get at this problem? And to sit around, you're talking about English as a second language as the problem. That's just one finger of the problem. You see, that ain't the problem.
No.
And you have to have more than money to get at the problem.
So you want money and power in your question?
Well, I want to ask you that next.
You were going to get in, and George?
I refuse to remain quiet on this. I'm embarrassed as an educator of the San Diego school system that the students that are victims, they're victims of our society and our system, are not represented by the teachers that should be involved. Three people stood up today to speak about tracking, three of them Anglos, and we looked for Mexican-American identity, and they're nowhere to be found except for people actually involved
in the inner city project, and they were selected for that position because of involvement for the Mexican American. We, Hal Wingard has asked for sensitivity as far as the structure within the system. Well, we as teachers within our own barrio setup have been accused of being marginal, that we do nothing, we're afraid. You damn right we're afraid. Because if we speak out, nobody supports us. And then we're looking for another job. I saw the same thing happen in L.A., where Sal Castro came out, he made the big blow, and boy, everybody was behind him until legal matters and money started to take place.
Because that's then, selling.
Then they fell, boy, they fell by the wayside. I went to the State Papa Convention in L.A., and you know that there were two teachers at the State MAPA convention. The rest of them refused to be involved in that type of situation. So here was Sal Castro, all alone, trying to get funds for somebody to help him. Okay, that's L.A., and we're not a satellite of L.A. We're sovereign in our own right. But yet, the Mexican-American teachers that should be here, should be meeting in this type of situation, are reluctant to come here, because if they become involved, they're going to be placed in La Jolla
right.
High School, Point Loma High School, and maybe Madison High School. Okay, the ad hoc committee, let's go into that. I'm a member of the ad hoc committee. It's not an inner city ad hoc committee. There's lack of communication here. Estelle has a gripe that women have not been allowed to join this committee. Well, they should be allowed, and I believe that we can see a way for people actually involved to be members of this committee. There is lack of communication. In fact, that this committee has every meeting that we have had, minus two, we have minutes. So if the Mexican-American community or any other person involved wants to find out what has transpired at these meetings, minutes are available at the Ed Center through Hal Wingard's office. Now, the things of ESL, all this, it's rebuttal. We're rehashing things that have happened. As far as the Mexican is concerned, we have subcommittees to identify people to try to locate teacher assistants, by linking people. All of this has been planned. It took place at our last meeting Monday. Now, then we go into the selection of personnel for this project. Right or wrong, the groups that are represented on the ad hoc committee endorsed the people that were selected for the inner city project. We cannot be marginal. If we made a decision, and it's our purpose on this committee to make decisions, we endorse Leonard Fierro, we endorse Dr. Moreno, we endorse Norman Hauser, 100%. So take it from there. Okay, Hal Wingard. We have to know, in lack of communication, we have to know what our line staff position is. You direct questions at Mr. Wingard, and he should be going to Dr. Hall. You direct questions to everybody, and they should be going to Dr. Hall. So we had better be sensitive to the positions that these people hold in our system. We also have to be sensitive to the fact that there are many ways of solving these problems. Very, very sensitive. We come here asking these people to be sensitive. You're asking me to be sensitive. Well, okay, I as a member of the school system, I became involved in this ad hoc committee. Actively involved. So people start telling me, you had better watch it. You're a product of this. You're a member of the establishment. You had better get the hell out of there or you're going to be burned. I mentioned various times. 2 years ago, I wouldn't have given a damn. I wouldn't have wasted my time in this type of situation. But 16 months ago, I had a son. We're going to live and die in San Diego. And if I can change this system, I'm going to. And I'm looking for another job. I mentioned to Hal Wingard, I'm looking for a job at UCSD. But I'm very, very embarrassed. Three Anglos represent the teaching profession outside of our regular structure. But yet people not in the inner city project, there was no one. And it's up to the Chicanos here, and it's up to the rest of you to start making sure that we help ourselves. We don't want Ellery going to the school board and saying, this is what the Mexican thinks, this is what the Negro thinks. We are articulate. I'm hoping that at this moment I'm proving that. If we believe that, we will go ourselves. We want to build leadership amongst ourselves. We want to go to the school board and say, we the Chicanos feel that Norman Hauser belongs or does not belong. We don't want another Anglo speaking for us. Let's build leadership within our own ranks.
Chairman, I'm going to stand to comment on one of what the gentleman just said. And certainly, I hope that Dr. Ellery did not take this with an offense, because if the Chicanos and if the black people don't speak up for themselves, I'll be damn glad myself if Anglos do speak up for them. So, Stan, if they don't hear him, you keep talking. I'm sure you meant that in that context. What has to be done is we have to begin to speak to the needs of ourselves as black people and as Mexican-American people. And if we don't do that, then I hope to hell that somebody will have the guts to do it for us. That's the thing to here to do. The point I wanted to make was, one, I want to make a recommendation to this body. Since the change that's going to take place today is going to change to take place, if we don't do it as adults, the young people are going to do it for us. And it's going to be a hell of a lot of chaos. I want you to see, for an example, the movie Wild in the Street. I want you to go see it. It's at the Rancho Drive-In. It's at the Spreckles Theater. I suggest you see it. And don't laugh and say it couldn't happen, because I believe it could, and I believe it will. If we are in the school, if we are ourselves, don't make some changes. Secondly, since it seems, as this young lady pointed over here in the corner, it seems to take 6 months and a day to begin, and we keep beginning after knowing what the problem is. The point I'm going to make, this is a public announcement, and it precedes one that I'm sure the school board may want to announce at one time. Lincoln High School will have a black principal in September.
Please don't mess.
Before we adjourn, Dr. O'Byrne is here, who is vice president of San Diego State College. You have a comment?
No comment.
Or is it true that Lincoln?
I never heard anything about it. Really. Wait a minute. What? George made a statement. Look at George.
George, where did that come from?
It came from the black people, Mr.
Oh, you mean this? I just want to be sure that it wasn't.
In other words, you supported the young lady over here by saying you take 2 weeks and a day to do something. No, we ain't gonna put no black kids in there while you take 2 weeks and a day.
Well, that's not to me, George. I just asked you where did you know that?
Where did you
know? Oh, yeah. So, but I thought maybe you were, I didn't know what your announcement meant.
The announcement meant just what it said.
Oh,
a black principal at Lincoln in September. Now it's up to you to find it.
All right. Before we go, Larry, okay, remember, let me mention this, because I think you ought to get in. Then, Larry, that you and you'll be the last one. There are EOP programs, there's the Bert Reeves here, is on the State College. Otherwise, I don't think I would be imposing upon you, Ernest O'Byrne. Ernest is one of the vice presidents there. He works with Bert and others. Do you have any input you want to put into this? Even if you haven't done what you want to do, and so what we're talking about all of this as
about
mixed
program,
education.
You mean?
About all education. Do you fit into this anywhere?
I do have. I think it's very important to differentiate roles and power here, and it's part of what's been said. In large, in all the large organizations, San Diego State or the school district or anywhere else, it's awfully tough to have anything that somebody wants the top, have it down the bottom, but it's a lot tougher to start down the bottom and work way all through the top. You've got to keep pressure on the people appropriate to their level and their function in the structure. And an individual classroom teacher without tenure cannot be expected to lead very many parades. On the other hand, once they get tenure, then they got to begin to think to start to lead some parades. And when they get to be department chairman, then they're more important. And when they're principals, they're more important. And when they're program directors, they're more important. And special project directors, they're more important. And finally, sooner or later, as they get to be associate superintendents or vice presidents of colleges, they're in the kitchen then. They've got to have the heat. And they have got to exert the leadership as much as we can. And I think most of us, I know George feels this way, and I know I feel this way, feel every day that somebody can remind me of a way that I haven't done enough in my job at San Diego State College about this, which I think is the most important problem. What I hope is that everybody keeps the heat on me personally, and at the same time realizes that I can't change the laws of the state of California, for example, or I can't change directly what goes on in one classroom, San Diego State, because it isn't my role. But there's some things I can do. And if the people who need them done will try to perceive as carefully as they can who's got the power to do what, and then put the heat on the people to do those things they can do, I think we will all get a lot farther in getting this whole problem out in the open and getting some massive solutions instead of worrying about getting federal funds for this or federal funds for that or pilot programs here or little small EOP programs at San Diego State when we ought to have a massive attack in a lot of realms.
Mr. Chairman, something disturbed me this morning. I heard it for a second time, and it comes back to the point of not having Mexican Americans or black people available to do certain jobs. Mr. Chairman, I want to call this group's attention. It's very damn disturbing that I've gotten word now that two black people who are in administrative capacity are seeking jobs out of this town. One has already left. Abel Seitz has already left the city. He's a black man who was very capable, but because of the challenges that nobody offered him a damn thing in San Diego, he had to go to Compton. Now, another black man, this morning I've been told and informed that he's seeking a job outside the city too, and he's also in the same capacity. You see, the point is, if we're not going to make it advantageous for these people here and impressive for them here, I don't blame them hell they're going to leave. This young fellow just said, Mexican American, said he's looking for a job out of the system too, because the fact is, there's no opportunity within the system. Now, we're being shorted as black people, as Mexican people, when people who have disability and experience get screwed by the system and have to leave, that puts our children right back in jeopardy again and makes this a valid statement. And I don't like the hell out of it to make him valid by saying they ain't wrong.
Do you want last statement coming up?
Yes.
Oh, no, Larry was last. Okay, you and then Larry. You and then Larry. Larry's last.
Reacting to Dr. O'Byrne's statement.
A little louder, please.
Reacting to Dr. O'Byrne's statement and also to some comments to Dr. McDuncan's statement.
Chairman, I would have her stand. It's hard to hear.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
But I didn't see you as well.
Reacting to Dr. O'Byrne's statement and also some of the comments made by Dr. McDuncan. And remembering back several weeks when one of the members of the Board of Education was here and was upset because she didn't know what had gone before in a dialogue. The following week, she did go back to, she told me that she found that, in fact, reports of what had gone on in the dialogue had come back to the administration, but it had stopped and not reach the Board of Education. Now, we're talking about where the power is, where the massive programs can be initiated, and this is in the hands of the Board of Education in the San Diego City Schools. I would like to be assured by Dr. Hall that what happened here today, what was expressed here today, the feelings of not only the Mexicans here and the blacks, but also some of us nutty white liberals or whatever those funny words are you want to call it. We too are concerned about these problems. I'd like to be assured that this information will go to the Board of Education, that I don't have to go there too myself, as Ben Ellery has done. I would like to think that the spinoff from dialogue will actually reach those in power.
I will ask for a session with the Board of Education. It would have to be an executive session by some means, I hope, and report to them the what you're requesting. I will
play the tape.
Play
the tape.
Well, that's just an additional idea. You're saying when he does it, use the tape.
Use the tape that we use.
But again, I have. I can ask for so much, and I don't think I'm going to get 3 hours of their sitting to listen to the tape.
And you're saying you're going to start and
I will make an effort to report to the Board of Education, I mean the five people, regarding the nature of this meeting. Yes.
Okay, that's all right now.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, go ahead, Larry. Stand on that, just on that point, I have to rule no.
Yes. Because it's going to take 6 years before the board does anything about Henry Clay Elementary, 98.5% white kids out there. At the rate you're going, trying to...
Well, you're now back on this point, then.
I thought I was following on with the same...
No, he is saying that he was directly responsive to her question. Is this correct, everybody? He's saying that he will do that, he appreciates it. Now, we can't go on, I know, but he was responsive to that question, which I thought was direct.
No, the rate of progress is
what I was saying. Well,
let's argue one thing.
All right, Herb, you wanted to say something, and I'm waiting to get Larry to end it up.
I made one statement earlier that I had not found a complete commitment anywhere in San Diego County or the Southwest for specialized programs for Mexican-American children. And
don't
I'm not
talk
talking
too much.
I'm not going too much. But I would say that the pressure that you put on us is something that we have to respond to, and that's the way we listen and get things done. And I'm not without pressure in my office, and I do appreciate it at times. But I'm saying... I hope that this same pressure is increased throughout San Diego County, where districts have not even recognized that they have Mexican-American children. I know that today the San Diego City Schools put others on the frying pan too.
Well, I think this one is well taken. I hope everybody got his message there.
Absolutely.
Okay, then
we
we're going to end up...
We don't disagree at all with
what you said. Well, now, I'm going to have to cut this off somewhere.
Really
short,
yeah.
Is it on his point or?
Dr. Holmes.
Oh, okay.
I want you to take it back to them with a sense of urgency, because George has put a statement to you that they're going to have a black professor at Lincoln, and we're backing them all the way. And something will happen. You have a black professor, and you take that back to that board with a sense of urgency.
These are the minor students.
Okay, Larry, we're going to end up, I think, at 12:35. I think we're going to end up, but everybody sit tight just for a second.
I forgot what I was going to say. I only have to react and support Muriel. We know that the problem is white racism. This school board and any school board really is not doing anything to get to white racism, and one way would be to communicate the problems that we all know about, we're talking about, to the white community, and it's nice to say it's a problem with society. The society is made up by all of us and by the school board, and that's why the school board has got to take the brunt of this, and so will a lot of other people. But I think we need to get into the white community and tell them what's happening to Mexican kids and what a lousy ESL program is so far, and problems with curriculum. And I can't believe that the majority of whites won't support, for example, an integrated teaching of history. And it's something the sure hang-ups with desegregation. When we're talking about ESL and things that are going to be in communities, I don't dig this that the whites are going to really not support that. I think that many will, but they don't know what's wrong. They're just as ignorant as I used to be, I guess.
In other words, he said it's an epidemic. It's an epidemic what's happening today.
All right, I know we won't see all of the ones who were brought in by Dr. Hall today. Thank you for coming, and you'll be called back. Thanks again for coming. Thank you for all.